Welcome to Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I am your co-host, James Parker. Gregory Ricks out on assignment today. We may hear from him in a little bit, but no promises. He's doing another hit for the CIA. Coming up on the show today, 10 reasons you will go broke in retirement. Now, I'm not saying you are for sure going to go broke, but if you do go broke, here's the 10 likely reasons you will. Trump signs a handful of executive orders this week. The one yesterday, though, takes big aim at a lot of financial regulation, I should say deregulation. This could be the end of Dodd-Frank, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, the Federal Stability Oversight Committee, the Volcker Rule, the Fiduciary Rule. How does this change your investing? Coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to talk with Tracy, one of the partners of the Dwell Nola Realty firm. She's going to talk about buying vacation homes. Whether you're in Louisiana or Mississippi and you want to buy a home in the opposite state, we'll go through some of the processes there. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you better call, well, me, I guess, 504-260-0995. You can reach out to us via the Gregory Ricks & Associates app. I already see some people piling in on the Periscope and Facebook Live. Hi, guys. How you doing over there? Keep pumping the hearts. But I want to start off with just a little business news here. Unemployment ticked up to 4.8% in for the first month of 2017. And this is one of those transition months. This is sort of like putting a flag down, putting a marker down. Because whatever this rate's going to be for January, this is going to be the rate that it is when Donald Trump put his one hand on the Bible and the other hand up and was sworn in as president. So this is going to be the benchmark. This is going to be like after Katrina, where you can see where the water line was. This is going to be the unemployment water line. From here on out, this is what Trump's going to be judged by. And it's going to be tough for him because he came in at a period of relatively reportedly low unemployment. Now, we can all debate on how much the numbers are fudged, if they're fudged, how accurate they may be. But from here on out, he's going to start out with a 4.8% unemployment rate. So he's in a tough spot. It's tough to bring it down from 4.8% unless you're really fudging some numbers. So Donald Trump, even if he ends up with, 6% unemployment, which isn't a disaster, they're going to be able to say, well, unemployment went up under his watch. Barack Obama had it a little easier. Depending on what number you want to pick, it was 6.7. If I remember, this is all off the cuff, so pardon me if I get it wrong. It was 6.7% when he got elected. By the time he was actually sworn into office, it ticked up a little bit more. And I think it was in the sevens. So it's pretty easy there if you can come in during a relatively high unemployment period. That just makes your numbers look better. Because then they can go, well, under this president, the unemployment went up this much, and under this president, unemployment went down this much. And, I'm always hesitant to put too much on the president as far as unemployment numbers go. I think the bigger effect on that is Congress. And you'll see the patterns kind of smooth themselves out when you, instead of looking at what happens from president to president, when you look at what happens when one party is in control of Congress versus the next. Because even as powerful as the president is, that budget has to go through Congress. They have to sign off on it. And that's where you see the compromises made. So that's a pretty low benchmark. Here's the good thing about that. Even though the unemployment number actually ticked up just a tad, primarily the cause of the unemployment number going up was they were taking people off of the discouraged worker rolls, where you're unemployed, you're of working age, you're not disabled. You could be working if you wanted to, and actually you did want to work at one time, but you stopped looking for work. Over 700,000 of those people were taken off the discouraged worker rolls and put back into the workforce. We actually created jobs, and it wasn't a very gangbuster number. Depending on which report you look at, I think most people were reporting 227,000 jobs were created in January. And that's maybe barely enough to keep up with population growth. But that's not the number that's going to get us to gangbuster heights. Also, though, keep in mind, when you have unemployment that's, I hate the reported number. It's reported at 4.6, 4.7, 4.8 the last 3 months. It doesn't feel like that. It feels more like 7%. Or if you look at the U6 number, they still have it up at 8.8 or 9%, which I guess kind of feels more accurate. But I'm basing this on my limited work experience here. Gregory has a few years on me, but I still go back and my work experience began in the mid-90s. And I remember toward the end of the mid-90s when unemployment rate was super low. It was around 4%. And then I remember there was the tech bubble bust. And then after 9/11, it pushed that stock market low. And then on the upswing coming out of that, we had unemployment lower than it is now, the reported number, at least under the previous president. And I remember what that was like. I remember when someone got a new job, it wasn't because they got fired or laid off or, you know, their previous company closed down. It was usually they were already employed and they just went to a better job. And that's where most of the job hopping happened. Do you remember those days when people had a job and they were constantly getting new jobs, even though they had a job? It was amazing. That's what they call this full unemployment. You're never going to get the unemployment rate to actually zero. That's just a statistical fallacy. There's going to be someone through the month of January whose business closed down, and so they had to go look for work, or somebody got fired, or someone did a no-call, no-show, or somebody overslept for the last time, and they got themselves fired. There's always going to be someone in transition. There's going to be companies that go out of business. There's going to be a layoff that happened. So really, we economists kind of agree that 3-4% is full unemployment. And you don't want it to be lower than 3-4%, because even if you're a small business owner and say you got a shop and you just need a guy to sweep and mop the floor of your store, I mean, once you have everyone employed, who is left? There's like a bottom of the barrel of society that's just not fit for any job. You want some guy drooling on the floor while he's sweeping it? You know, there's mouth breathers and caveman looking guys and troglodytes out there. So really, we're just an inch off of full employment, according to the number. Does it feel like it? Do you still have friends getting laid off all the time? And not just in the radio world. That happens to be a function of radio, period. But I notice other businesses are like ours now, where someone's just running along doing their job, and they go in the next day, sorry, you're no longer employed. See ya. That's not what full employment is. Full employment is when people have a job, and they keep getting plucked up into bigger and better jobs. And that's how you get ahead in the world. Because when you go seek a job and you don't have one, you have no leverage. You have no negotiating ability. You'll take far less than what you think you're worth because it's better than the zero that you got last week. And that's not what happens if you already have a job. If someone's going to try and hire me off of this job, they're going to have to come up with some cash. And I'm going to be in a good spot. So if you see me moving on before I get fired, just you can assume, dang, Parker scored. Went on to bigger and better things. But while I don't like seeing the unemployment rate go up, I still think this 4.8 number is a fantasy number. I don't think it's real. I think if you believe it, you're intentionally suspending disbelief here. Do you remember? And this, it doesn't really feel right to say the word feel in an economic sense or when we're talking about numbers. But does this feel like full employment? Do you remember full employment in the late 90s and in the middle of the aughts there? That's not what this feels like. Man, there were job postings everywhere. There were commercials, we're hiring at so-and-so, or we're expanding. It was different. It was absolutely different. And another thing we're watching is the labor force participation rate. Now, it ticked up a bit too, thank goodness, from its historic lows. Basically, it hadn't been this low, historically speaking, since women entered the workforce, since we basically had told about half the population, no, why don't you just stay home and take care of the kids, and you know, if things get really dire, you can go be a seamstress somewhere or something. But basically, since Mary Tyler Moore got out and joined the workforce, participation rate hadn't been this low. It ticked up 0.2% in January. That's what we need. I'm not blaming any president. That unemployment, that participation rate had been going down for about 10 years now. So the decline preceded the current administration. And you look, I'm not saying necessarily the participation rate is a bad thing if women are leaving the workforce, because that actually is a signal of wealth. That's a sign that, well, we can get by on just one income. Husband's making enough money that I can stay home and take care of the kids, and I figure the kids would be better off, and they'd be more well-behaved, and the schools would be better. And like, there's a lot of positives there. But that's not the reason the unemployment or the participation rate is this low. The reason participation rate was this low going into the last, I guess, about 12 years is people just saying, screw it. That's it. Discouraged workers, taking people off the roll so they're not counted as unemployed. Went up 0.2%. Not a piddly one. So there's a lot to learn here from this unemployment report. But this is the benchmark. This is the watermark. And it's weird because, you know, how much credit do you give to the new administration for January? a little. Granted, he didn't get sworn in until the 20th, so just the last 11 days were under him, and the previous days were under Obama, but Obama had nothing to do with it. This rally post-election is based on the idea that the new paradigm, the new operating climate for businesses in America is going to be different under this administration. So I, more so than anything, you can kind of hand off this positive move to Trump, but I'm still going to criticize him for that 4.8 number. This is not a 4.8 unemployment economy. Another big piece of financial news this week. The Brexit vote shocks again. How many times are they going to get this Brexit vote wrong over there? You know, the original vote that happened last June, this was about the UK deciding whether or not they were going to stay as part of the European Union, which has gotten way out of control. It was sort of a free trade agreement back in the day, sort of an economic pact, and now it's gotten to where they're regulating the snot out of people on the island of Britain and its little subsidiaries, and they want it out. And when they talked about it in June, and well, in May and June leading up to it, it got a lot of attention in America because the reporting on it sounded a lot like the reporting here, where if you support the idea that Britain should leave the EU, well, then you're a bigot, and you hate immigrants, and you probably hate women, other minorities, too. And they were telling you the polls were 10% in favor of staying, and then they had the vote, and it went the other way. Looked like exactly what happened for us in November. We were told that, you know, that one party is on its way to victory, and the other party is full of racist bigots, homophobes, or whatever, and they hate immigrants, and it turns out they won. Then they actually had to do the vote in Parliament to move forward with the process. We were being told that the votes for it, for getting rid of the Brexit, were going to win. They were wrong again. 504-260-0995. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, give us a call. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Welcome. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I am your co-host, James Parker. Gregory Ricks out on assignment today. Donald Trump signed an executive order yesterday afternoon. I think technically it was in the morning. But he signed an executive order yesterday, and there's about 20 things in that could be affected by this. And it was just sort of a broad, sweeping outline of principles that he is authorized his people to pursue when reviewing existing regulations. What you'll notice first and foremost in the audio from the little ceremony he had, it was just a press availability where he signs the executive order. Listen to how frustrating and absolutely loud camera shutters are these days. This is 2017. This is all digital. You don't need the physical mirror to flip up and snap around, and they have the cameras do like the five quick shots in a row, and so it goes. That is so. That's louder than Donald Trump. Turn that crap down. This is digital. Look, when I take a picture with my iPhone, they have to make a sound. It has to go coming out the speaker. It doesn't. You don't need to make a sound. These are digital cameras. It's very frustrating. I want you to weed through that. Let's work through that together and actually listen to the comments when he was signing the statement yesterday.
Today we're signing core principles for regulating the United States financial system. Doesn't get much bigger than that, right? Would you like to explain this? Why don't you explain this?
What we're doing is we are returning the American people, low and middle income and investors and retirees, their control over their own retirement savings. This is about Main Street, and it's been a labor of love for me for over 4 years as chairman, and I have had this is a big day, a big moment for Americans here to invest and save.
And she means that so much.
Can we do an executive order about the shutters on a Canon EOS Rebel? Can we do that? Or Nikon? Can you do an executive order dealing with that issue? Did you ever realize before I said it how annoyingly loud they are? Because everyone kind of tunes them out when it's happening in the moment. But when I have to go back and I have to take the audio and I have to record it first, and then I have to edit it, and then I have to, you know, try and mess with the wave to make it as easily listening as possible, there's nothing I can do about that. And whenever you see it spelled out, the camera shutters, since they're snaps, are way bigger than the the audio or the vocals. So I can turn up the vocals, but I can't turn down the snap. It's just to lose. Anyway, so did you fight through that? Did you actually hear the content there? Because let me get Angie, you can go do your thing now. Because let me give you the rundown here. This could be the end of Dodd-Frank, the financial regulation package that was passed when Obama got in office in response to the financial crisis. And that's their words, not mine. It's not a financial crisis every time there's a recession or a bank fails. But the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, this monster that was birthed out of Dodd-Frank, the Federal Stability Oversight Committee, another wretched mutant that it's like a gremlin they fed after midnight that needs to go away anyway. The Volcker Rule, which a lot of people are going to disagree with me on, but I think that needs to go. And the Fiduciary Rule. Now, the only one that's probably just done, period, point blank, into story, would be the Fiduciary Rule. And the only reason that one dies so easily and so quickly is because it wasn't something that was passed through Congress. Barack Obama instructed his labor secretary at the time to just magically change the rules on what legally counts and does not count as overtime and what your that's a different one, not the overtime rule. He did it to overtime too. Him telling that just magically anyone who gives financial advice of any kind has to be a fiduciary. I got my executive orders mixed up. That overtime rule is probably gone too. Thank goodness, right? So the Fiduciary Rule, it fits into the metaphor that we use on Winning at Life all the time, the butcher versus the dietitian. That's the difference between a broker and a fiduciary. And the Fiduciary Rule seeks to make brokers act like fiduciaries and no longer act like brokers anymore. And what's the difference? Well, when you go to a stock trading house, you go to a stock broker, what's he going to sell you? Stocks. I mean, that's all he's got. He can sell you stocks. He can sell you other derivatives of stocks. He can sell you mutual funds and maybe even ETFs. But he can't get you a fixed annuity. He can't get you a life insurance where if you max fund your life insurance, you can use it to kick out income or you can use it to pay medical bills. He can't help you. He can't help you steer your 401k and get in and out when you're supposed to. And what are the funds in there? He can sell you stocks. You go to the guys who can finally sell you a fixed annuity. If they're not a fiduciary, but they're a broker, that's all they can sell you. It's an insurance license, so they can sell you life insurance or they could sell you a fixed annuity. If you go to the bank, they can sell you a variable annuity, but they can't sell you fixed. So the fiduciary guy is like a doctor, like a dietitian. The broker is like a butcher. You go to a butcher, you ask, what should I have for dinner? He's going to sell you meat, period. That's it. If you go to the seafood store, if you go to the boiling pot, they're going to sell you crawfish, shrimp, something that came out the water. But neither one of those guys are going to turn around and sell you some vegetables. They're not going to sell you. I mean, they say this may be some good beef for a potato stew. But that's what they do. That's their product. And to the guy that only has a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So instead of having to go from broker to broker to broker and pick out, you know, your different baskets yourself, the fiduciary is like a dietitian who starts off asking you a lot of questions. Hey, what should I eat for dinner? I don't know. Are you happy with your weight? What's your cholesterol like? Are you diabetic? That's the big difference there. They'll start asking you questions first. And they wanted everyone who sold financial products to act like a fiduciary because, you know, you see some people not necessarily get cheated, not get hosed. They just don't do the best job with their investments that they could possibly do. People do better with a financial advisor. You do better if you go to the gym with a personal trainer. But that doesn't mean everyone who goes to a gym has to have a personal trainer. I guess probably the better metaphor in this is under the fiduciary rule, everyone at McDonald's would have to be a chef. Like the person taking your order at the drive-thru would have to be a chef. Now, how expensive would that make a Big Mac? Wildly more expensive than it is now. If everyone in the line who touches the food, everyone who takes your order, everyone who puts a bun together, when they hand your food, when they take your money, all those people have to be certified executive chefs. They all have to go out and they have to get educated and they have to pass these tests and they have to keep them up and they have to be licensed. That burger is going to cost $20. So then what happens to all these people who were buying burgers yesterday? Most of them can't afford a burger tomorrow. And they're just going to have to do without a burger, financial products and services, period. So while I can understand why it would be nice if everyone who sold financial products had the level of expertise of a fiduciary and they were required by law to make recommendations based on the best interest of the customer rather than what they asked for. Well, I can see how you would very naively and shallowly think that would make the world a better place. But there is no magic that can happen. It's like one of the laws where they say, okay, look, we have a problem. Not enough people have health insurance. Well, let's pass a law that says that everyone has to have health insurance. Well, there's more negative consequences than positive ones if you're going to do that. Why don't you just pass a law that says you're not allowed to be homeless anymore? Why don't you just pass a law that says you're not allowed to shoot people in the streets anymore? You know, it's not really a solution. It doesn't work like that. The world doesn't work like that. So I'm glad the fiduciary rule went away. I hope the entirety of Dodd-Frank goes away. And if you were listening to the show last night, you know, we do the daily wrap during the week. One of my big complaints about Dodd-Frank, I don't even have to know what's in it to know I oppose it. But James, you're just opposed to any financial regulation or reform. Not any, but if you're going to go put another layer of financial regulation and reform on top of the 8 layers of bureaucratic hell that we already have in the financial world, then I'm against it. You know, it's like when they came up with the Affordable Care Act. It's like, well, we need to find a way to get medical care to people who can't afford it. Okay, that's a tacit admission that your previous attempt at government intervention to provide health care to those who can't afford it has failed. So shouldn't we repeal Medicaid before we come up with your program? No, they didn't. They just stuck it on top. Well, if you're admitting in 2010 when this law passed. Or was it 2009? I think it was passed in 2009, became law in 2010. Don't get too nitpicky here. You're going to miss the big picture. But if you're admitting in 2009 and 2010 that we need financial regulatory reform, that if we have a system out there that allows financial collapses to happen, well, hang on a second. Didn't we just pass the Sarbanes-Oxley Act under the previous president, under George W. Bush? And we were told, well, we just had a financial crisis here. We had the tech bubble bursting and we had all these banks failing. And it was a big, nasty, disgusting pile of dog poo. Just a flaming bag of dog poo. So we passed Sarbanes-Oxley and we won't have this problem in the future. Well, we had the problem again 8 years later. Does that mean shouldn't we go back and repeal Sarbanes-Oxley? Didn't we just recognize that that's failed? How can we never go back and we repealed the policies that we were told were going to fix it that failed? So we need to go back and do that. And then we need to go back and do the financial regulatory reform package that happened under the other George Bush after the savings and loan scandal. I guess Clinton did some of that, too. I guess we need to go back and change the Community Reinvestment Act. That was started under Reagan, but it was expanded under Clinton. That's where all the subprime mortgage stuff came from. Shouldn't we go back and repeal all that? Shouldn't we go back and repeal the Securities and Exchange Commission that was birthed in the Great Depression so we wouldn't have another depression, so we wouldn't have another financial crisis, so we wouldn't have another big drop in the stock market and contracting economy? All these things have failed, yet we never repeal them. I love this talk about repeal. And when Trump said he's going to repeal 75% of regulations, I laughed. I said, my God, I wish. What a beautiful world that would be. Because, look, what happens if you repeal too much? I don't want to say it's not a big deal, but you can always go back and just pass the regulations again. You know, it's not like they'll never come back. So when we return, we're going to talk about the financial impacts. How does that affect you? How does that affect your investments? You know, some of this is going to affect Dwayne Stein. He's coming up on Mortgage Gumbo at 1 o'clock. This may be the end of TRID. 504-260-0995 if you want to call in and chop it up on any of this financial news. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Welcome back. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Stick around. Coming up in about a half hour, I'm going to be joined by Tracy Kessler. She is the partner of the Dwell Nola Realty Firm. Real estate expertise will be on the show in just about 30 minutes. So if you have any questions regarding real estate, purchase, buying, selling, we have the head of a real estate firm, not a real estate agent. The head of a real estate firm coming in a half hour. And then also coming up at 1 o'clock, Mortgage Gumbo with Dwayne Stein. Tracy is a member of the Total Wealth Authority. Dwell Nola is the company that's partnered with Gregory Ricks and Associates. People that we have vetted, that we work with, we match up with them philosophically. We've had customer complaints are nil when it comes to dealing with these people. And we went ahead and picked it out because we just want this to be a one-stop shop. If you come in to Gregory Ricks and Associates and you have a financial issue, we don't want to have to tell you, well, we can handle this, this, and this, but for that, you're on your own, or you're going to have to just Google that one. No, we don't. And plus, these things come up so often. I mean, how often do we have someone who comes in and they've set out their financial world and they're like, okay, so here's what I want in retirement. I want a retirement house in Pass Christian, and I want some vacation money, and I want to downsize my existing house here in the city. Well, of course, we're going to need a real estate agent. We'll need a mortgage guy, too. Also wrapped up into almost every financial plan that we put together is estate planning. That's a must. So we have Wes Blanchard, the estate planning attorney of the Total Wealth Authority. And he's actually in the same little office complex as Gregory, which is super convenient because we end up working with him almost every day. And then there's only two things that are guaranteed in life, death and taxes. So we got half of that covered with you for Jude Heath, CPA, the official CPA of the Total Wealth Authority. Which, he's probably running around picking up a cigarette habit because it's tax season right now. And I know those guys are running crazy, which kind of reminds me I need to get that guy my info. So that's what the Total Wealth Authority is all about. And part of what Gregory Ricks and Associates does that other people don't is we don't turn you away. If you have a financial situation and you're a client, well, we'll figure it out together. We may not be the alpha and omega expertise on every subject, but we can pull in people who we worked with and vetted before, so nothing will fall through the cracks. Can we hear Trump again real quick? I just don't focus on the cameras this time. This is history being made. It's just this little sentence, a couple of sentences he's saying, and he turns it over to his little staffer that put this together. It's just amazing, this little ceremony, the enormous impact this is going to have on your money.
Today we're signing core principles for regulating the United States financial system. Doesn't get much bigger than that, right? Would you like to explain this? Why don't you explain this?
What we're doing is we are returning the American people, low and middle income and investors and retirees, their control over their own retirement savings. This is about Main Street, and it's been a labor of love for me for over 4 years as chairman, and I have had this is a big day, a big moment for Americans here to invest and save.
And she means that so much.
All right, now you hear plenty of complaints about the Affordable Health Care Act because of the enormous amount, not only the size of the bill, but the amount of regulations that were sprung forth from the bill. And so it's always something questionable constitutionally if you basically pass a law with some regulations, and the regulations in the law that you passed, once it's passed, they are used to make more regulations that can be enforced by law, but those laws never actually went through Congress. That's always an interesting debate to have, and I will err on the side of negative when it comes to whether or not this is constitutional. But it happens all the time now, so the constitutional argument, we'll set that aside for now. But the amount of regulations is almost as big as the Obamacare Act. And I'm not sure, it may have passed it at some point, but it was almost a 1,600-page bill? So now I want to look this stuff up, because if I get it wrong, people are going to get hung up and discount the rest of my analysis because I got the number of pages wrong. But Dodd-Frank, far-reaching implications. We're told that because we passed this bill, we don't have to worry about these financial collapses are too big to fail, or some of the other things. I mean, the promises were fantasy. It doesn't matter what law you pass. There's certain fundamental guarantees that are going to happen. You can't, like, you could pass a law against gravity. It's not going to work, though, is it? You can pass a law where we're going to try and regulate gravity, or you can try pass a law where there's gravity oversight. But if I stick my arm out the window and drop something, it's going to go to the floor. So a lot of this happens with the business cycle, too. Businesses are not meant to be immortal. Businesses are meant to fail. You know, they have a life cycle as well. It is hyper rare for a business to stay open for what? 2 years?
Don't 80% of all businesses fail in the first 2 years? That's a good thing. And, you know, the example that gets used up a lot because we all have to see these is think about all the restaurants that open and close within 2 years. Think about that building. If you're in the New Orleans area, over in Metairie, off Veterans, there's that one little place next to Dornax. Is there? Maybe I'll pull that out. And it's been four different things in the last 5 years. It was Cypress, and then it was Rocket Fire Pizza, and then it was something else, and now I think it's a pharmacy. But the good thing about those businesses dying is it's sending signals to the business world. We have too many restaurants, or we have enough restaurants. There's not enough people going out to eat every night to warrant another restaurant in this neighborhood. And that needs to happen. Businesses need to fail. Because what if they didn't? Well, then these people who were working in the restaurant, they actually, you know, it gets shut down and they go and they have to find something else that's actually in demand in the community. And so we all win when that restaurant closes down. As long as those people go out and they have the entrepreneurial spirit and they go try and fill another void that's demanded. But Dodd-Frank flies in the face of that. Dodd-Frank, it takes on this idea that once a bank's open, it should be open forever. Or once a bank gets too big, it shouldn't be allowed to fail. Says who? You know, a lot is talk about the company I'm working for here, iHeartMedia. I don't know if you keep up with the financial world, but, our corporate debt has been written about. And the concern is, well, what if they can't get that under control? They're going to collapse. Well, look, what does the collapse look like? Does WRNO go away? No. Even if we go into bankruptcy, it's just going to be broken up and sold off to people who don't have the debt and can make this either right the ship, turn it into something else, maybe shut it down, but probably not. There is value in this station. So it's not like this stuff really goes away. If a bank breaks up, or if a too big to fail bank is allowed to fail, all those people who had insurance with that bank, yes, they are uninsured right now, maybe. A lot of those policies will get sold off. If the policies get dropped, they will turn around the next month and go take that money that they were spending with AIG and go spend it with another bank. But what other bank will they spend it with? See, if a bank is a bad actor and it fails, or if it makes some wrong investments and it fails, or it's packaging these mortgage-backed securities and they're rated improperly and it fails, well, then that bank is going to get punished, not by active government, by act of the market, by failing. And the banks that acted properly are going to pick up all their customers. Dodd-Frank takes away the incentives for businesses to behave. Dodd-Frank takes away the incentive for people to be conservative in their banking, for banks to not take big risks, for banks to be as prudent with their clients' money as possible. If you know that no matter what happens, the government's not going to let you shut down. If you know that if you go out and take these risks, even if they fail, there's going to be billions of taxpayer dollars to come prop you up after your failure. What's your incentive to not behave risky? What's your incentive to be prudent and to make wise business decisions? I'm not saying there's no incentive. I'm just saying it has been severely diminished. So let's get rid of that. Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. They're here to protect us from, our evil financial overlords. Really? What do you think? Do you own a business? Again, let's use the restaurant model because everyone understands how restaurants work. Don't restaurants have a built-in incentive to not give their customers the trots, to not give them salmonella, to not give them improperly cooked food, to give them good service, to give them a clean environment? Don't they already have a built-in incentive to do that? I mean, you could say the same for these financial institutions. You know, what's the incentive for a financial institution to not lose money for their clients? Because their clients go away. They get a bad reputation. Their clients go to their competition. And if they keep doing that, then they're going to go out of business and their competition is going to win. Consumer Finance Protection Bureau operates under this myth, this fable that businesses are out to scam their customers. Look, there is such thing as a bad actor in business, but the response is to get the word out. They'll automatically lose their customers. Then it's a self-correcting problem. What has a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau been in practice? It's been a institution that goes up to banks and says, you know, we don't like the way you were lending out money 8 years ago. We think it was kind of racist. Oh, my goodness, what are you going to do? Well, we're going to sue you, and we're going to drag you through the mud in Congress and in the media. Oh, my goodness. Well, what if – is there anything I can do about that? And then, yeah, about $4 billion, and this can all go away. It's just a racket. It's extortion. The Consumer Finance Protection Bureau does not protect consumers. It extorts the businesses. And if you're going to give Citigroup and Chase Bank and Wells Fargo $4 billion in unexpected costs, guess who's that's going to be passed down to? The consumer. Hey, thanks a lot for protecting us, guys. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. I'm James Parker, 504-260-0995. Snooze Talk, 995. We're on two affiliates, Sci Heart Radio. May we all know that nothing ain't cool till you wear a new on the sound of a quarter rolling down the jukebox. Play the saddest trend right above the two-pie. Before you get lost down some road. Slow on it with the top off the back of a Bronco. Buy a cold sixer with a casting lotto. Smiling with her hair blowing out the window. Where you about to go? Yeah, you learn to fly. If you can't, then you just free fall. Welcome. Swinging It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I'm your co-host, James Parker. Gregory Ricks out on assignment today. Mike in Waveland called in recently. Oh, no, it's someone that was not ready. We're doing that in the next? Okay. Sorry, we'll do that coming up. Coming up will be Mike in Waveland. He has a big 401k. Now what? I love doing this one because this is another chunk of people that we hear quite often. All they did for retirement savings was, in the background, throw money into their 401k. It's gotten piled up. Now what? We get this call all the time. It's always good to review that. The S&P gained 216% in total years under the two terms of Barack Obama. And so for that 8 years, the average annual gain, 15.5%. That's probably his best stat. It's hard to complain about that, right? I mean, you can go ahead and argue, well, yeah, he came in when the stock market was on a downturn, and he came up and he left at a historic high. You can also say, well, under the previous guy, they said Wall Street did good while Main Street suffered. They're not saying that under this guy. Let's stop. Just some credit somewhere. I'm willing to give him that. I get it. The Fed kept interest rates ultra low. They destroyed the bond market in order to push everyone into stocks, and that puts up whatever the reason is. At least your 401k isn't getting killed. Yeah, you can go. Oh, we can do Mike and Waveland now. Let's do Mike and Waveland. Mike in Waveland, you're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. Are you listening to us on our new affiliate, 104.9 WBUV out of Biloxi? Mike in Waveland, are you there?
Actually, I have, but tonight I was listening on R&O because I was driving in from New Orleans.
Well, I will take either or.
Yeah, either way.
Well, as soon as we get fuzzy, you know, you can flip over to 104.9 now.
There you go. The reason for my call, I'm getting to the point of getting kind of towards the end of career, and I got to start looking at what I'm going to do from a retirement income standpoint from the money that I've got in my 401k plan and IRA. Wanted to get your thought on taking some portion of it and buying a relatively short-term immediate annuity to cover maybe 5-10 years, and then leaving the rest of it at investing, between stocks and bonds.
Okay, back up, start again.
Okay.
What are we talking about asset-wise?
About 750.
Okay. How much, and you're wanting to buy an immediate annuity? Period certain to cover, say, 5-year period certain?
Yeah, something along those
okay.
lines.
Yeah, because I like period certains when we talk about immediate annuities. And for all the listeners, you're talking about annuitization. Instead of doing, say, life, he's talking about a period certain, like 60 months, which is 100% payout no matter what. At a clock, no matter what, every month he's getting a check. So you're wanting to do one for about 5 years while you give the other assets time to grow.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, it's a way of laddering.
Yes.
Sometimes I've done that with clients where we'll do a period certain, and this was when interest rates were a little bit better. Because we're just kind of in such a low interest rate environment, the yield is kind of tough on a 5-year period certain.
Yeah, I mean,
but we would
point.
Start that, and you're good if you're kind of and you don't mind 0 to 1,
right.
Just because it's no risk, it's certainty. But most folks are looking, oh, how can I get a little more yield? So
well,
1 to 5 is a 60-month period certain, and if you're laddering, you might see what are your options for years 6 to 10 on a deferred one that you turn on for 60-month period certain. Then you've given your equities 10 years to grow,
right,
and get in position to carry the load beyond that.
Well, I also figure it levels out the highs and lows of the stock market. I mean, you can, if you've got, let's say, 60 months or 120 months, not that market timing ever really works, but at the same time, if the market's going to hell in a handbasket, you can defer buying another annuity until things look a little more rosy.
Yeah, well, here, when you go pull up a chart, like Google Finance, go back to all years and then put in a technical
on the
100-day moving average on the S&P 500. Okay. We don't necessarily call it market timing, but if you're following the 100-day moving average saying, oh, my gosh, it broke down, I need to get away from it. Mm-hmm. When you look at it that way, it saves you a boatload of money and makes you another boatload. So when you're looking like that, that, okay, I need some stability here and I want time for this to play in my favor. And I'm telling you, volatility is coming back. You know, that type of 08 event. Yeah, we're going to have that again. And I think it's a great concept.
Thank you very much for the call, Mike and Waveland.
All right. We did a great little segment on the show. If you missed a daily wrap, this is the kind of stuff you're missing. 10 reasons you will go broke in retirement. I love it when we break down the list. I'm a sucker for lists. I used to complain about lists, but then I realized that I'm one of the people that caused lists to be so popular because I click on them so often. So if they populate your newsfeed to an annoying level, you can partially blame me. But this one's solid, and we've been doing the show long enough. I do not have the financial expertise of Gregory Ricks, but I'm a top-seeded amateur. And so when I saw this list that came out in Forbes, it was actually 12 reasons you will go broke in retirement. I cut out two of them because that's what kind of expert I am. 10 reasons you'll go broke in retirement. Hi there, Tracy. You lose too much money in the market. Oh, you're going to go ahead and talk now? You're just going to jump in? It's not your hour yet.
I was just going to tell you hello.
All right, you can just wait there with your little real estate expertise. You lose too much money in the market. And part of this is making bad decisions. Part of this, like when you hear about the firefighter pension fund going out and buying a golf course and losing their shirts in it. You know, that's part of it. Another part of it is just riding downturns. So when you know the stock market's going to go down, they just tell you to wait it out, buy and hold, stay the course. Why? Why not get out, wait till it bottoms out, and get back in? Because, you know, it takes a while to make that up. Number two, you live too long. Good problem to have until you run out of money. Living too long means that the median retirement, 28 years. So how long did you work in your life? You have like a 30-year, 35-year work history before you retire, maybe 40, 45 years, you got to turn around and you got to make that salary that you lived off for 45 years last for another 28 years. Did you really make that much money? Did you make twice as much money as you need every year and save half of it? Because that's about what the math would turn out without the miracle of compounding interest. Number three, you spend too much. That happens really hardcore in the first couple of years of retirement. That really throws off the math and screws up the compounding. But spending too much also is one of the easiest ones to fix. We have clients, we had a client, and they were in a spin down. Their assets were running out. They weren't going to last, and they were spending more money than they were making off their assets every year. And the recommendation was, hey, listen, all you got to do, sell your house. You live on a golf course. You live on a posh little golf course in a gated community. You know, your dues are super high. Your taxes are super high. You know, living on a golf course is killing you. The amenity, the nicety, the luxury of living on a golf course is ruining it. If you go live in the neighborhood next to you even, and you get rid of the dues and you get rid of the high taxes and you get rid of the upkeep and the big old lawn, you'll be able to make it. They refuse to do it. Nope. We need the prestige of living on a golf course, and we can't look silly in front of our friends, so that will cause you to go broke in retirement. Number four, you rely on a single source of income. If all you're hoping for is either that one pension or your Social Security, or if you're a government worker, your federal pension, that's going to cause you to go broke. Number five is a big one. You can't work. Not because you can't find a job, but you physically cannot work. 60% of retirees leave the workforce earlier than planned, and just 16% retired early because they felt they could afford to.
A big chunk of that is people who get hurt and you just can't do your job anymore. Number six is sort of along the same lines, but not really your fault. You get sick. What happens if you need a triple bypass at 48? Yeah, that's going to hurt your retirement savings. It's going to hurt whatever savings you have. You will end up broke in retirement, especially if you don't have proper health insurance. Even if you're retired and you're on Medicare, and you're going to need long-term care on top of that. You're going to need the average man, the average 65-year-old man needs $68,000 saved up to have a 50-50 chance of affording his health care expenses in retirement. And that includes Medicare or private insurance. For women, it goes up to $89,000. Number seven, you tap the wrong retirement accounts at the wrong time. Number eight, you don't consider taxes. We have an entire tax planning strategy built into all of our financial plans, which is why we get to loop in Jude Heath, the CPA. Number nine, you're bankrolling the kids. Yeah, it's nice to help them with college. Yeah, it's nice to help them with that first down payment on their first house. But after that, man, we see people just blowing through their retirement savings. And ultimately, if you want to help out the kids, being a burden on them in retirement is not doing them any favors. And number 10, this is sad, but we see elderly people getting scammed, seniors getting scammed. What is that? Oh, and here's the sad part about that. 1 million elders lose $2.6 billion a year due to financial abuse. Family members and caregivers are the perpetrators 55% of the time. I'm James Parker. Coming up next, Tracy from Dwell Nola on Real Estate. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Welcome. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I am your co-host, James Parker. Gregory Ricks out on assignment today, so I'm flying somewhat solo. If you have a financial situation, you can ask the top-seated amateur over here, 504-260-0995. But also in this hour, we have the partner of the Dwell Nola Realty Firm, Tracy's in studio, Tracy Kessler. Your other half, a little under the weather. Best wishes. Get well, Stephanie.
Yes. Yes, Steph, if you listen, and we miss you and love you.
Yeah, and you just relax, have a good weekend. We'll put you back to work as soon as we can. I mean, as soon as you're better, right?
Yeah. As soon as we can, right, I would throw it. She's actually still working, laying in bed.
No, yes. Stop it. Stop. Just,
oh, yeah.
It'll
no,
be
she,
okay. It'll be okay,
Steph. She can't. I'll pick it up all of her stuff, but she can't stay away too long.
Tell you what, I sure can.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in this business, you really can't. I mean, people need their... You know, properties. They need to sell them. They need to, so we have to be there 24/7. If you go on vacation, you have to be available. So it is what it is. Look, if you become a realtor and you can't work weekends or vacations, don't become a realtor.
What's
the
point?
That's the bottom line. Yeah, you can't.
Those are your hot times, huh?
Yes, exactly.
You guys kind of slow down in January, February?
Starts picking up probably mid-January after the kids go back to school. It slows down probably mid-November, gets close to Thanksgiving, December, you know, January. It slows down a little bit around Mardi Gras.
I wanted to ask you about some of the financial regulations that we were talking about. An executive order was signed yesterday afternoon. I know it's not fair. You haven't even had 24 hours to research on how this is going to affect you, but this could get rid of Dodd-Frank. This could get rid of TRID,
yeah,
which is more of a Duane issue, but of course that piles onto
really
your experience,
is because
too.
For us...
Wait, stop.
Okay.
What is TRID? Explain to the person listening.
TRID is they inducted regulations on lenders that they had to, in other words, so all of the documents that a buyer would get, this is for buyers, for a closing, the closing document is very confusing for someone who's never purchased a home before. It was confusing for me as a realtor at the beginning, and it took me a while to learn what it was because every lender calls their fees a different name. And then you're wondering, well, why does that lender charge this and this one doesn't? So what TRID did was they made one single document that all lenders have to use. I mean, all title companies and lenders have to use this one single document.
Oh, one size fits all. What could possibly
that's
go
it.
Wrong?
Those, yeah. That's the rule. Okay, and then you have to have specific names, and everybody has to use the same thing. So when you're comparing, you can compare apples to apples if you happen to be comparing lenders or title companies or anything like that. So
or apples.
That really is good. It was a little bit of an adjustment for us to our agents to adjust to, probably all agents, to reading it, but the buyers don't know that because when they come on, that's the only document they see. So that was really good. And the other rule that is pretty good, but it can really put a glitch in a sale, is you have to have the document 72 hours prior to closing. The buyer has to have them. So say, for instance, they get the document 72 hours before closing and something is incorrect on the documents. They have to be sent back to the lender, adjusted, then the 72 hours starts over. So that's kind of it can push a sale back, you know. So
well, I've heard you and Dwayne talk about
that. Would be better if that could maybe go away, you know, maybe make it 24 hours or something like that, 72 hours. But if it has to go back just for, you know, an edit, maybe
you don't
know,
reset just, the clock.
Yeah, I mean, that would be better, you know. So
well, I've heard you. I've heard Stephanie.
I know lenders don't like that. It's frustrating.
And I've heard Dwayne talk about how some of the regulations out of this bill has increased the amount of time it takes to actually pull off the transaction.
Well,
it used
yeah.
to be in 30 days, you could probably get it yeah. done. Some of them are going more like to 40, 45.
Actually, Dwayne's still closing 30 days. He does a lot of his, like what he does is you have to underwrite certain things. So you have to underwrite the buyer. They have to be underwritten. So you have to go back and do all the research. The underwriter does all the research on them. Are you approved or not approved to get a loan? Then you have to underwrite the property. So you underwrite the buyer. Dwayne knocks that out ahead of time. So he's just waiting for them to find a house, find a property. So they're already approved, officially approved. Everything's done. Then they find the property. So all he has left to do is underwrite the property, which takes. So if you start doing
all
the.
Well, you keep saying underwriting. What do you mean by underwriting?
Well, underwriting means all of the documents that the loan originator will send to the underwriter, and they approve everything on the documents. In other words, the income, the debt to income ratio, they have to pull all of their W-2s. They look at everything that a buyer would submit to be approved. The underwriter has to look at it and say, okay, we're good to go. The loan originator pretty much knows already. But the underwriter says gives the final word. So if Dwayne gets that out of the way ahead of time, all he has to do is underwrite the property, where some lenders will just start the underwriting process all at one time after the property.
Well, you keep saying Dwayne does this. Why don't more people do this?
There are a lot of lenders that do that. I think they're going that route. Not all of them do it. And it doesn't push them back sometimes, but it is good to have it out of the way.
But this also means he's doing a lot of work that a lot of times isn't going to turn out into be a
loan,
right?
It may not, but he does it to make sure that he can close it in time, and that's one reason why he gets a lot of buyers, because he promises them. He said, we're going to get this close. If there's a huge glitch, obviously he can't, you know, prevent it, then he can't close it in time. But that's only if there's something drastic that happens.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm glad you're explaining some of this, because he's told the stories, and that makes sense, about how someone came to him and they said, I was told that we could get this closed maybe in 30 days, and Dwayne did it in 17.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think we've gone over with him over 30 days that I can recall. I don't think, unless Stephanie has. But if there's extenuating circumstances, it might, possibly, you know, so.
Well, there's no free lunches here. Either you have the extended waiting period, either it takes longer for these transactions to happen, or you're going to require your mortgage lenders to do extra work that they're not going
to
get compensated for sales that aren't even going to happen.
Right. So there are some things probably behind the scenes that I'm not aware of that the lenders have to deal with. But I know that I think the documents that we use are nice, that we have the same documents and everybody has to use the same verbiage. So you can compare. I think that's good. And then the 72 hours is a bit long, maybe 48 hours. I don't know. I mean, it's because really we don't need it 72 hours just to read the document and make sure your buyer understands what the document is saying. you know, you review that. And then if there's a glitch, you put it back in, fix it, and then just continue on. That would be preferable to me, preferable for me.
I find myself lately being amused by these protections, and I'm doing the air quotes with the protections, like a prospectus when dealing with securities. If you're going to buy a stock,
right,
they send you a prospectus, and it's about 200 pages about how the stock can go the wrong way and explaining how everything works. Mm-hmm. And this is supposed to be the full disclosure, so you know exactly what you're getting into, and you know everything from front to back. Before you put your money down and put it at risk and maybe even lose it. Here's the problem. Nobody
reads that.
Nobody reads
that.
Nobody does. And I know you're not supposed to say nobody. You're not supposed to say always. You're not supposed to say never. Nobody reads it. No one's ever read a prospectus.
I've never read them.
No.
I've never read them.
So what's the point? It's like when you get the update on your iPhone and Apple's like, well, here's our new terms of service, and you got to scroll down through 18 pages.
If you say no, then you don't get to use the property, the unit. Yeah.
What am I going to sit here with the old iPhone that's all busted?
Right.
Right. I'm going to hit accept no matter what it says.
Right.
They say, exactly. James, you got to cut off your left arm tomorrow. Just accept, whatever. Can I play Angry Birds now or what? Can I get back to my text messages?
It's true.
I'm expecting some good stuff.
That's true. Yep.
So what else happened after Dodd-Frank that changed how y'all do business?
Well, on my end, that's really the only thing on our end that really affected us was the amount of time that we had to wait between the time that they got the document and the new document itself. And that's really the only thing that we deal with per se, for the most part. The rest of it is behind the scenes with the lender. And that's the stuff that Dwayne is frustrated with. So I think that he probably does like some of the changes, I'm sure. The ones that I'm stating, I think, except for the 72-hour thing. But I'm not really sure what he doesn't like about it. You know, I mean, that would be more of something we'd have to ask him.
Well, if you look on paper, there's fewer banks out there and there's fewer lending options.
Yeah.
I don't know if the big guys or the ones that are left are expanding to fill in those gaps, but is it harder to get
loans?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was for a while, but now, you know, they're not as loose as they were in 08 when we had the crash, okay? Because that was just anybody can get a loan. Now they're doing, I mean, they're still even back to doing stated income loans, which a lot of those were.
Yikes.
But they do a lot more research on you than they did prior to that, you know, and the interest rates are higher and stuff like that. So it's not what it used to be, and it's a lot tighter. But it's good. I mean, it's really not bad. I haven't seen anything drastic because of TRID, but it would be nice to loosen up the reins a little bit.
Who are some of the big guys that dropped out? You know, because one of the other things that could get rolled back from the executive order yesterday, Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, and they went around flogging banks because they didn't like the way that they did business 6 years ago or 8 years ago or whatever it is.
Right.
Has that caused a pullback? Because Dwayne, the way he talks, Wells Fargo and Chase and some of these guys used to be really big in the mortgage market, and now most of them are sort of secondary. They'll let the correspondent lenders go make the loans, and they'll buy them on the back end.
Yeah, they'll buy them. I mean, a lot of times when you do a mortgage, you sit down and sign your documents, it's already sold before you even sign. So whoever's purchasing that on the back end, you know, Wells Fargo just had that big debacle.
Yep.
So that's a mess right now. But the larger lenders, to tell you the truth, I like guys like Dwayne, honestly, because I've had more issues with the big guys. I'm not saying it's bad. Like we've done a deal. I had a client do a deal with Whitney before. I've had a client that did a deal with Chase. That's the banks that they use. So they knew people there and that's who they went with. And I can tell you the Whitney deal was a lot smoother than the Chase deal. And you would think, oh, the big guys it's going to be a lot smoother than, but the small guys really are. It's a lot smoother to go with a little guy.
All right, we're talking with Tracy Kessler. She's one of the partners of the Dwell Nola Realty Firm, a little boutique firm, part of the Total Wealth Authority, based out of Metairie, Louisiana. But they can help you out if you're listening over in the Biloxi area or Gulfport or Pass Christian or Baton Rouge up to there. We can help you out here. Coming up, we're going to talk about getting a Gulf Coast vacation home. And later in this hour, we're going to talk about some featured properties. There's one in Pass Christian I see over here. Looks pretty cool. There's a Gulfport action. Mm-hmm. Actually, a couple of Pass Christians here. So if you have a financial or real estate question, 504-260-0995. We'd love to give you some help. I'm James Parker. You're listening to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Welcome. It's Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I'm your co-host, James Parker. Gregory out on assignment. He should be back for the Daily Wrap on Monday. Just something came up at the last second. Like, literally this morning.
He
called in.
Like, that happens to him sometimes. Yeah. Happens to all of us, I guess. At some point.
Luckily, Tracy Kessler, Dwell Nola Realty's in studio. We're going to talk about Gulf Coast vacation homes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is... This is kind of a split deal because we've talked about investment properties,
sure,
especially on the Gulf Coast.
Right.
And that's something that I don't know if it's HGTV and TLC, you know, having such an influence, but everyone wants to get into the flips or they want to do the
rentals.
Yeah,
rentals.
Yeah. And did you see Sidney Torres has a show coming out starting March 1st it's called The Deed, where he's doing real estate investing. So this is. What a weird hobby this is.
We got a guy from the parish having his own show.
And he's perfect for it.
He is. He's a great personality. He really is.
He's got personality and the ego to match it,
mm-hmm.
I don't mean that as an insult.
Kinda need
you need
have
it.
The ego
you
to
have
do
to.
That.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, when he was on our show a couple weeks ago, he was great. We could have just turned it over to him.
Yeah, that was a good show. Yeah, it was great.
But it's such a weird hobby. You know, some people play golf. I like to play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
There's no guitar that's going to cost me $200,000, though, that I could possibly lose and flush down the toilet immediately.
Right.
So this is, the people treat it like a hobby, but this is serious business. Are you okay?
You can lose a lot of money.
You've heard more stories than I have about that, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah, I've heard some sad stories, and it's just, I had a client that I was dealing with, and he was actually doing a flip, his first flip. Such a nice guy, but he went in, he bought it on an auction sight unseen, right? One of the auctions where you can't get in ahead of time. If you're a first time flipper, do not purchase a property this way. Absolutely not. Because I mean,
sight unseen, what could possibly go wrong?
You got to be
literally
in this
everything.
For a while before
everything can go wrong on
you
a sight unseen.
You can't, as a first time or a newbie flipper, do not do an auction property. It's too risky. So anyway, it put him in the hole. It really put him in the hole. This is a guy that I met after he had purchased it and he was already sort of renovating and he was already into the renovation. And then I met him and he wanted me to list it for him. So, He just overbuilt for the neighborhood, you know, over-renovated for the neighborhood. And, you know, it only had one bath. That's always a drawback. And he just didn't know everything about it. He knew it had one bath, but he didn't see it was a lot of work. So,
but is that what's going on? Are these TV shows, they made it so chic and sexy that everyone wants to pile in?
Well,
or was this always going on, but it was more in the background?
It was always going on, yeah. But the thing is with the shows, they have to edit it. So they can only put in so much. So there's really so much more to it than what the TV shows bring. It's the TV shows do the highlights. It's extremely stressful. It's extremely stressful for the people that haven't done it long. And once you have to start somewhere. So if you start flipping, you just have to one at a time. Don't try to do two at a time when you're new, just one at a time. Like I have one of my investors right now, he's doing three, but he's been doing it for a while. You know, another one of the guys, he's got about four of them going, right? Four or five of them go. But they, you know, you have to develop crews. You can't have them running from property to property. You have to have people on these properties every day. And you have to have enough in reserves to handle this, you know? So if you're just starting off with the flips, one at a time, you know?
All right. So that whole process sounds a lot more complicated and a lot more layers on it than just getting a vacation home.
Yes,
you buy a home that's already ready to go.
Yep. That's better to do for a vacation home. So anyway, we talked about this a couple of years ago. I think some of the things that you want to do if you're going to purchase a vacation home. The reason I'm using the Mississippi Gulf Coast right now, we have our Biloxi listeners, and I go there all the time. And the reason I choose the Mississippi Gulf Coast, because it's right around the corner. I've rented properties everywhere from Waveland to Ocean Springs, and like everywhere, because we rent properties over there three or four times a year on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. I love going there because it's right here. So visit the area a few times before purchasing. And I don't mean just the Gulf Coast. I mean, like, if you want to go to Pass Christian, you know, visit, learn about that specific city. Cost, insurance, taxes, utilities, HOA dues, landscaping, pool. You have to recognize that you're going to have these things if you have a single family home or a multifamily home. If you're in a condo, you have the HOA dues. If you're in a home, you have the grass cutting, pool upkeep, whatever. So just make sure that you're down to do any of those upkeeping issues. Property manager, if you're doing leasing and maintenance. So if you're an absentee landlord, you want to have a property manager to keep up with it. Do the leasing, collect the rent, do the turnover, have somebody come in and clean, cut the grass.
Hang on a second. We're going to go to David and Biloxi. You're talking with James Parker and Tracy of Dwell Nola Realty. How can we help you, sir?
Yes, sir. My question is, with the new regulations coming out, are they going to do away with 20% down for rental houses?
No. I think that's going to be a standard thing. I can't imagine that that's going to happen now. You know, if you have, like we'll talk about today, if you have a vacation home, you can put as little as 10% down if it's a vacation home. If you're doing investment properties right now, the least you can get is 20% down. So, I can't see that that's going to go away, because that was like that prior to these regulations, and it's like that now. So I don't know. Actually, even prior to the regulations, the minimum was 30% at one point. Now it's 20%. I can't imagine it going much less than that. If it does, I'd be thrilled with that, because I do a lot of investment properties, you know. So we'll have to keep an eye out for it.
Okay. Yeah, that was my question. I have extremely good credit, and so is my wife. We have a couple rentals, but we'd like to get a bunch more. But the 20% down is kind of limiting it.
It's tough. Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. And we'll talk about some financing options, too, that you might be able to use. They have HELOCs and reverse mortgages and all kind of stuff you can do to get money to purchase property. So.
Yeah. Okay. What about the process, since you already have rental properties, is you can refinance what you have if you got some equity built up in your existing properties and maybe pull that out and use it for the down payment?
Yes, I could. It's possible. One's paid off. The other, let's go about 125 on.
Well, now you need to talk to Dwayne. He's going to come on in about an hour and a half, and he's the guy that would rope those together for you.
Yeah. He deals with a lot of investments and vacation homes and stuff like that. So definitely give him a call when he's on at 1.
Yeah, if you're listening, if you're listening on 104.9, he comes on at 1 on WRNO only. So if you can't get us on the air feed, find us on the iHeartRadio app, WRNO.
Okay. So
or you could just take a shortcut, mortgagegumbo.com, call his office whenever you get a chance.
Okay, will do.
Thank you very much,
Thank
David.
You.
Perfect call. Still 20% down, still none of that changed.
No, that didn't change prior, and it hasn't changed now. And that is the minimum you can put down for a standard conventional loan for an investment property. You can put 10% down for a vacation home, two different things. Okay, so because the vacation homes are considered second homes. Okay, it doesn't have to be called a vacation home. But if you get a second home, it's 10% down. If you're going to lease that property out, it's 20% down. Because it would be an investment property, two different definitions. So, and Dwayne handles all those. He handles all those for us.
If it's your primary residence, though, there's a ton of options.
You can do 5%, 3.5%. Yeah, there's a
rural development VA loans.
If it's your primary, if it's your primary.
Okay, so back to Gulf Coast vacation homes.
Yep. So ensure the property can be leased as a vacation home, even if you're not planning on leasing it when you purchase it. So I have one of my clients who purchased a condo, I don't know, 5 years ago, maybe. I'm not leasing this property in Gulf Shores, okay? I'm not leasing it. And she has not leased it. Now they're not there as often. The kids have more functions going on. So she's like, I'm thinking about leasing it. What do you think? And, we discussed that. So just make sure that, it's in an area that you can lease it that would be desirable for someone. I have another client that built a house in Pass Christian in a neighborhood, but it's a standard neighborhood. It's not like on the water or anything like that. It's just a subdivision in Pass Christian that she built a house, and that's her second home. She doesn't lease it at all. They spend tons of time there, and they stay here. The kids go to school here. And then during the summer, they're there a lot, so that's their second home. But if you plan on possibly leasing it or you're not sure, get it in an area that would be desirable for vacationers.
Look, I can tell you as a vacationer, the few times I do it, the big attraction there is the beach.
Oh, of course. Yeah, the beach, the bay. I mean,
I'm from way inland. I grew up in East Texas.
Right.
So the beach is like exotic territory.
It's great.
And that's not a bad beach. In Texas, you would
go
to Galveston or Corpus, and it's kind of dirty and brown. And
The water over there is not great. But, it's if you have a pool, You swim in the pool, you lay on the beach, you can jump in a boat and go to Ship Island or hang out on one of the, you know, exterior islands there. And there's a lot, there's really tons to do on the coast there.
Look, for a bumpkin from inland, that beach is awesome. The only beach I grew up going to is Galveston, and the sand looks dirty, and the water is even dirtier than what's over in Mississippi. Like you said, the water's not that great. That water's fine. It gets a lot worse than that because everyone going into Houston and out is just kicking up mud constantly.
Okay, I was wondering, because like in on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, they have those barrier reefs out there that are kind of don't allow the water to come in and out and clean it up a little bit. I think that's why the water is like that there. So maybe over in Galveston they have some issues like that too. I don't know.
Well, they have all the gigantic port traffic that rolls right through there,
and it gets kicked up.
Yeah. And the water's constantly muddy.
Like the Mississippi kind of, huh? It's muddy.
It's exactly like the Mississippi. Yeah, okay. You can't see your feet even when you're in 1 foot of water.
Yeah, well, it's not like that in Biloxi.
No, not bad at all. They have worse jellyfish over in Galveston too. Everywhere they have jellyfish.
Yeah, you can't go in there up and stomp.
But for me, that beach is incredible.
Yeah,
and it's only like
bad.
An hour away, so I'm like in a dreamland heaven.
They're constantly grooming the beaches. I see the beach combers come in the machines. They come and groom, you know, they turn up the sand, fluff it up, and clean up the... They do a really good job. It's nice over there. It really is.
And if you look at the houses that are on the beach, what are we talking about? Like your standard little three-bedroom, two-bath house that's...
Oh, well, we have one. Okay, so, you know, I work with Mimi Brown with Mississippi Gulf Coast Realty over there. And she's in the Mississippi Gulf Coast. She has one right now that is 790 West Beach Boulevard in Pass Christian, 1,300 square feet, two bedroom, two bath, $950,000. So, but it's all brand new, beautiful pool, guest cottage.
Tracy Kessler, Dwellknoll Realty. We'll talk about some featured properties for Gulf Coast Vacation Homes, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Welcome back. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I'm your co-host, James Parker. Gregory Ricks out on assignment. Hey, if you want to join us at our next Gregory Ricks Live event, come out, meet Gregory, meet me, meet the Total Wealth Authority, meet the crew at Gregory Ricks & Associates, see if we're the financial firm that's going to be handling your financial future. The Ides of March. These are little tricks I use, rhetorical tricks I use to remember this. It's on March 15th, the Ides of March. You know what the Ides of March is?
I've heard of it.
That's the day that Julius Caesar got stabbed to death in the Roman Senate in 44 BC.
Yeah.
With all those A2 Brutus. That was on the Ides of March. Anyway, so on the Ides of March, I can't guarantee anyone's going to get stabbed to death, but there is going to be an excellent steak involved if you so choose. But really, it's a financial first steak to find out.
That's our next one, yeah.
Yeah, that's our next one. Actually, the next event for the women folk.
Right. Women folk.
I just wanted to
you
use a bumpkin term. Yes, for the lady folk out there. It's the Valentine's Day luncheon. We're not really pushing that anymore because I believe it's booked up.
Okay, at Austin's, yeah.
Yeah, we already have over 50 reservations for 50
seats. I guess
so.
That's a
great
restaurant.
We're like, someone's going to no show. Someone's going to cancel.
Right. I know. That's the only way to get in now.
Kind of fingers crossed. Well, we weren't too sure about this one because this was a bring a friend luncheon. Thing is, when you have people come into these situations, they're almost guaranteed to not be clients. But what they do is they have a financial situation and you just kind of steer them in the right direction. And if you do the right thing, we found that 2 years, 3 years, 4 years later, when they're in a better spot, they'll come back and actually use our services.
Absolutely.
So a lot of this is for people who are in a situation where their head is spinning. They've never had a financial situation before and maybe their husband died and they just got a big pile of life insurance, or maybe like their last existing parent died and they inherited like a property and an estate and they don't know what to do with
That's
it. And
true.
Now they're fighting with all their siblings and then the grandkids and
tough. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is sort of that financial first date or sort of coming. Let's give you a big hug. Let's see if we can get this all sorted out, put you on a path. And if you can handle this right in about 5 years, you're really going to need a financial advisor.
And it's good because Gregory said when we pull the ladies by themselves, they ask more questions. So this is a good event, and they'll probably do that. Because every event, when they're by themselves, they do that.
They ask more questions.
More questions. They're more comfortable.
They ask better questions. They ask follow-up questions. It is amazing how different they act.
Yeah.
And you know what it is? It's because jack wagons like me aren't around. It's because guys aren't around.
Well, because the husbands usually handle the finances. So they just said, well, I'll just defer to them.
Well, that's not necessarily true. It's actually about a 50-50, but somehow in public, I guess.
Well, probably for investments, I'm thinking, you know.
What you looking at? In my ear? Okay.
David and Past Christiane called back, and he had another question.
Okay.
He was wondering, he has a double lot because after Katrina, he lost his property, so now it's just land. Mm-hmm. And he's wanting to build, but it's near the coast. And there's a new Past Christiane smart code that happened, I guess, after Katrina, where properties need to be a certain height.
Yes.
He was wanting to know if that was just residential and not for businesses.
Well, you know, the bottom line is, that's going to be up to the insurance, because you have to get insurance. So that's probably for everything over there. I can find that out from my connection over there. But I would think that you would have to have it to get insurance, because no insurance company is going to want to take on the risk if you're built below the base flood.
The smart code.
Yeah. Smart code. Yeah. Do you find anything on there when you Google that?
Yeah, I found a gigantic 150-page document. So this isn't going to be much help. It's the entirety of the smart code. Yikes. All right, Tracy, we were just talking about, since you're the proprietor, is that the right word, of the Dwell Nola Realty firm?
Steph and I, 50-50, yeah.
Y'all do a lot of these vacation homes on the Gulf Coast. And look, we were just pointing out the value of that guy's dirt, David, his dirt next to the beach is immense. This house that you talked about, and it's one of your featured properties.
Yeah.
790 Beach Boulevard in Past Christiane.
Yeah.
1,344 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
Two bedroom, two bath.
Right.
Now, my house is about 1,700 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
Three bedroom, two bath.
Right.
And it's worth about a third of this one.
Yeah.
Based simply on location.
Yeah.
So
on the beach, $950,000.
Yeah, $950,000, but that's a deal.
That's a deal. Guest cottage, two bedroom, two bath that they rent for $1,900 a month on that property. A pool right on the beach. So, and it's beautiful on the inside. It's beautiful. I mean, it's got the old knottywood pine and a fireplace, and it's really pretty. I mean, it's all upgraded. Everything. It's beautiful. And that's a great one.
What else we got going on in the Gulf Coast right now?
So 104 Cedar Ridge Road in Bay St. Louis, 1217 square feet. That's a three-bedroom, two-bath for $295, which is a great price. And with that full price offer, you're going to get a 20-foot blue wave boat with a trailer with a full price offer. And that is access straight to the bay and Jordan River. It also has a pool. And so it's kind of more of like a camp style, where the one on Beach Boulevard is like a house. This is more of like the camp style, you know, the
where you're on. Is that like a channel, the Jordan River?
Yeah. A lot of people take their boats out of there and just go fishing out of there and stuff. And this is on the bay side. So Beach Boulevard obviously is on the beach. And then the one on Cedar Ridge is on Bay St. Louis. Well, there's another one. Okay, so now we're going to talk about a condo, because, you know, some people like the condos where they just have to pay the HOA dues and not worry about anything. So
sign me up.
Yeah, 2228 Beach Drive, Unit 504 in Legacy Towers in Gulfport. That's 1163 square feet, two bedrooms, two bath for $222,000. There's indoor-outdoor pools, saunas, a putting green. They have a clubhouse with games and a pool table and... It's great. They have all the amenities in that building. And then if you decided you wanted to build, we have 113 Mulberry Lane in Past Christiane. That's a waterfront on the bay, 80 by 125, and that's $145,000.
And that's just for the dirt.
Timber Ridge subdivision, yeah. That's just for the land. But they have a golf course there and a pool. So you have amenities in that subdivision too. And Mimi Brown with Mississippi Gulf Coast Realty, she's the one that I deal with over there. So those are some of the properties that she's working on now. But getting back to the getting a vacation home. So you'd also want to check if you're going to be renting it. You need to find out if there are restrictions on short-term rentals. So a lot of the properties on the Gulf Coast, obviously, there probably are not restrictions on a lot of the rentals because that's what people do. But in some of the neighborhood areas, people doing Airbnb and stuff like that now, or vacation rentals by owner, you have to make sure there are no restrictions in the areas that you're looking. You want to research the occupancy rates, the peak rental seasons, check the crime stats, install a security system with a camera.
What happens? You know how we talked about to the guy that called earlier, David.
Yeah.
If he's buying a rental property, he needs 20% down. If it's going to be a second home, a vacation home, 10% down. What if you buy it as a vacation home and then you change your mind, you want to rent it later?
Okay. So, yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. And I did talk to Dwayne about this. If you directly go into it and purchase it as a second home and immediately start to lease it, that's mortgage fraud. You can't do that.
Who even busts you for that? How would they even know?
Look, I wouldn't take a chance.
Well, I'm not saying you should take your chances.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure, you know. I mean, they may not, but I just wouldn't risk it, you know.
Sure.
So now I have my friend and my client who's had her place for 5 years, condo. HOA fees, lots of people in the building rent. She didn't want to rent it. She bought it as just a straight up conventional loan, second home. 5 years later, she's like, you know, we're not there that often. We want to start leasing it. Yeah, at that point, you don't have to go back and refinance it. You know, it's just, she just decided she can't be there as often as she used to be. So I might as well make money on it, you know. So, I mean, just don't go in with it thinking that you can do that and then you don't do it and you get busted for fraud. But I don't know who would bust you. I mean, it would have to be the lender. Do they come around and check? Probably not. But, you know, I cannot advise you to do that.
Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a lawyer before mortgage fraud. Yes.
Yes. So, and then the further away from your primary residence, the less likely you're going to use it, right? Like I said, my client that bought in Gulf Shores, they used to go there all the time at the beginning just because it was new. Now it's a lot harder to get there, 3-hour drive.
Hang on. Got a text from Dwayne Stein listening in. He said the IRS will be the ones to bust
the
you.
The IRS. Okay,
when you're filing your taxes.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because you do have to send them the mortgage paperwork, sure. Especially for the interest deduction. But then if you have this income from the same property, they run it through an algorithm and flag.
Yep, that's true.
Thanks,
IRS. Okay, there you go. Thanks, Dwayne.
Thank you, Dwayne. All right, we're talking with Tracy Kessler, partner of the Dwell Nola Realty Firm. We're getting some real estate expertise, talking about the process of buying a Gulf Coast vacation home, things you need to know. If you have a financial or real estate question, not quite sure what to do, give us a call, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Spinning wheel spin. You got no money. You got
welcome.
No.
This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I'm your co-host, James Parker. Gregory Ricks out on assignment. He'll be back for Monday's spectacular broadcast. I already know it's going to be spectacular. You should be here for it. Tracy Kessler's in studio with us, partner of the Dwell Nola Realty Firm, giving us some real estate expertise. We've been talking about Gulf Coast vacation homes and the process by which you can go to the nearest beach.
Mm-hmm.
Not about it. It breaks my heart when I hear people gripe about that beach.
Yeah, I know. You know, I think more people gripe about the water than the actual beach itself, than the sand. But, you know, it doesn't bother me at all. I mean, I really don't go in the water when I go to Destin anyway. So,
well, people watch a travel channel or they look at the postcards that people used to send back in the 80s or whatever. And there's always just like
beautiful.
This sapphire blue crystal water. It's like, all right, that's not real. But what you need to do is you need to go to a beach that's worse. A few times, and then you'll really appreciate what's over there. Galveston's worse. Like, I know another beach that's worse is in California. You know, their sand stinks. It's not really sand. It's like little bitty rocks.
No, we have some of the prettiest beaches over in Florida and Mississippi in the country.
Yeah, and that whole part's man-made anyway. That that Mississippi beach.
Actually, in right by there by we spend a lot of time in Bay St. Louis is when we go and pass Christiane because it's closest to our house. And they're all, I mean, they really keep it up nice. And they have so many events over there that they, you know, they have a lot of attractions. Ever since Katrina, things just went down the tubes and they've come back strong. They really have. So I vote for, you know, getting a place right there. The one reason I say the Mississippi Gulf Coast is because it's close to New Orleanians. So it's right there. Like, it takes me 45 minutes to Waveland, an hour to Bay St. Louis, not even. Biloxi's probably an hour and a couple of minutes, hour and 15 minutes. And then Ocean Springs, you know, an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. So it's just, it's doable. It's easily accessed. And
well,
you'll use your home more, your vacation home more, I guarantee, if you're closer to.
Well, I'm also thinking about people who are listening on our Biloxi affiliate. If you're looking into getting an investment business,
here.
You got a beach right there. You can score there.
And they can get vacation homes here.
Does that happen? People who live in Gulfport, they're like, let's just get a little condo in New Orleans and we can go there for the weekend. And
Stephanie just hooked up one of our clients with a condo in the French Quarter. It's their second home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Someone's got a little extra money than me.
Yeah. It's nice. It's really nice. You know, it's just a place to hang out. So
okay. Well, let's talk about the financing.
So financing.
Here.
So we kind of talked about that. Second homes must be 50 miles from the primary residence. If it's less than 50 miles, it's an investment property. Those are the standard rules for a standard mortgage. So the second home down payment.
But that's a bogus rule because I have coworkers right now.
Right.
Like there's one of them. She just got remarried about 5 years ago.
Right.
And her husband has a house in New Orleans and she has a house in the West Bank. And
well, they each owned that independently before they got married. Yeah. So
sure. I'm just saying it is possible for one household to have two houses within a 50 mile radius.
I agree.
But two legitimate houses.
That would be. I mean, I guess when you're getting the mortgage at that moment, they're going to ask you these questions.
Well, the buddy that Stephanie hooked up with the condo in the quarter? And she probably has a place, on the North Shore, maybe?
Yep.
And that's within 50 miles. So she had to go.
That would be a Dwayne question. I'll have to. Dwayne, send me a text on that if you can, or James.
Or cover it at 1 o'clock.
Or cover it at 1 o'clock.
We'll just fill up your show for
you. That's right. Second home down payment, 10%. Investments, 20%. We've already talked about that.
We talked about that with David from Biloxi.
Close to the primary residence. Okay, so the rates for the second homes, the interest rates are closer to primary residence rates. If you're renting it out, it's an investment property, obviously your interest rate's going to be higher. You can also use a HELOC, home equity line of credit, or a HELOAN from your primary residence. Borrow against that and put that toward the purchase of a home, second home. Or you can do a reverse mortgage. And Sue Milligan with Dwayne handles our reverse mortgages. You can do a reverse mortgage and you can use that money to purchase a second home.
Well, I like it when they use the term reverse purchase.
That's what it is. It's a reverse purchase. That's what it is. Sorry. Yeah,
yeah
that's
but
what it is.
Dude, call it a reverse mortgage because when you call it a reverse purchase, my brain starts to try and digesting that. And it's how do you reverse purchase something? Wouldn't a reverse purchase mean you're selling it? You know?
It is confusing. Actually, Sue came to our office and she did a whole seminar on reverse mortgages. And we had tons of questions because it's so detailed and she's phenomenal with it. She knows every single detail about a reverse mortgage.
And even though it looks like something, they will always correct you because a reverse purchase, you sell a house, you have a pile of money, then you go buy this other house, you just put half the equity down and then you don't have to make any more payments. And at the end of your life, the bank ends up with a house or someone else can pay off that loan. So it looks like you basically just rented a house for the rest of your life at half of what the value of the house actually is. And this is called a reverse purchase.
Yep.
And
that's what Sue had to come and teach us because we had no idea exactly how the reverse purchase worked. We've dealt with reverse mortgages, not reverse purchase.
Well, and it even with the commercials on TV on a reverse mortgage, they just sound so scammy.
It does, but I'm telling you, so many people are doing them now, and it's wonderful. It works great. So
I was a huge skeptic before.
When it first came out, I was like, let me see how this works before I advise anybody to do it, but it's they're for real. And I tell you, Sue's phenomenal with them. Stated income loans are available for vacation properties. Like I said before, that's, you have to really get with a lender that does these stated income loans, and there's going to be higher interest rates and rules and regulations. But that's somebody that doesn't have a W-2 or, just somebody that has a stated income. You're a musician or, you travel around and you take jobs.
We have this a lot for people who are already retired.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, stated income. So, and another rule is rent properties more than 14 days a year, you're a landlord. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can take the standard deductions. If you may use up to 14 days for personal use for you and your friends and family, you cannot charge rent. Work days do not count as personal use days. So basically you have 14 days to use for yourself or your friends and family. And then you have extra work days that you can use whatever. If you have to go to the property to, do repairs, it's counted as a work day. So if you're going to be at the property for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to do repairs, those don't count as your 14 days. But you do have to log everything that you've done and show receipts for when it comes to your tax time. So make sure that if you're using the 14 personal days, that's okay. You can just use those days. But when you are doing the work days, make sure you document all of the work that you've done and all the receipts that you have for those days, because your CPA is going to need those. And Jude Heath specifically told me that this is how it has to work.
All right. So for listeners here in the New Orleans area or in the Biloxi area, or if you're listening on the stream, and you're looking about a Gulf Coast vacation home, Dwell NOLA definitely can handle that. DwellNOLA.com. Ask for Tracy. That's the lady you've been listening to for the last hour across the table from me. Now, let's look at some properties we have here in New Orleans that you want to bring to my attention.
Yeah, so we have a couple of properties here. So the ones we're talking about today, 5504 Hawthorne and Lakeview by the Delgado area. That one is under construction now, 3,100 square feet, 4 bedrooms, 3 baths. Going to be about $550,000. There'll be a covered carport. An approximate completion day is 45 days. But if you guys want to come in and see that, let us know and we'll get you in. We have a building at 1111.
Oh, I know exactly where this is. 5504 Hawthorne. I just had to look. It's behind the Homedale Bar on that little side street there. Okay.
Yeah. I guess in my mind, I consider Lakeview in three different sections. I say the Delgado area.
Right.
The Fleur de Lis area, and then core Lakeview.
Oh, like for real Lakeview.
Well, it's just core.
Because I'm in the sort of disjointed stepchild.
That's an extremely popular area now. I mean, properties are selling there like hotcakes.
Yeah, but if I go over into the other side of Lakeview and I'm like, I live in Lakeview, they're like, well, you live in the west end of Lakeview. So, yeah. All right, got it. I know I'm not Lakeview proper. I'm still in your neighborhood. I hope that doesn't bring down your property values too much that you got a scumbag like me as your neighbor. This is in the sort of the Navarre area.
The Navarre, I guess you'd say the Navarre. And, some people think that area is more mid-city because it's right there. So
it feels mid-city, but it's 70124, so
yes,
what are you going to do?
Exactly.
All right, what's the other one we got here?
1111 Two Lane. This is a building. We have 100 units in here. Right now, what we're doing is we're leasing them. We have, they're all 2-bedroom, 2-bath, or 1-bedroom, 1-bath, or a studio. The ones we have left, we have about 80 units left, 1,500 a month to $11,000 a month. And this building is gorgeous. It's just brand new renovation. Eventually, they'll probably condo these out. But as of now, we're just leasing these out.
This is new construction?
No. This is the old Hibernia Bank, I think it was.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm looking over here. It's at Common and Loyola downtown.
Yes, yeah.
We're in the CBD on this one.
Yeah, right down from Tulane Hospital.
Oh, I see it. Yeah.
And it's beautiful, beautiful. So we have all the penthouses upstairs run from about $5,500 a month to $11,000 a month. And they all have beautiful... what am I thinking? Patios, out the deck.
And views. The you're in a penthouse,
rooftop,
what it is.
Yeah, the rooftop deck, so.
Have awesome parties, cool.
$1,100. Gorgeous. I mean, they're beautiful.
How much was it a month? $11,000 a month for the big one?
For the largest one,
I'll be there. I'll be there soon.
Yeah, and then hopefully after these people, they start leasing. If it's long-term leases, we can't condo them out yet, but we'll be doing that eventually.
All right. Thank you very much, Tracy Kessler, Dwell NOLA Realty. DwellNOLA.com is the website. What's your phone number if you want to do it the old way?
504-301-2400.
All right, more Winning It Live coming right up. I'm James Parker. This is iHeartRadio. They want to get my gold on the ceiling. I Swinging It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I'm your co-host, James Parker. How you doing? Happy Saturday. It doesn't feel like work. I know technically I'm at work, but these Saturday shows are always more fun than work. You've got 40 minutes to call in. The financial situation, maybe we can chop up what happened in the financial world. The level of expertise is going to be brought down a notch because Gregory's absence, but I'll give it a shot. Robert in New Orleans, you're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Robert?
Hey, James, how are you doing? The reason I'm calling is I'm curious what you might have as far as suggestions or guidance for me in my situation. I'm 36, going to be 37. My wife is of equal age, and we both have fairly decent jobs. We probably bring around $120,000 a year together home. And we both have 401ks from previous employers that are just languishing now, not really doing anything. And I've called a couple of different like money management type facilities, and they've all kind of told me that I'm too young right now for them to help me. Like, I need to be in my 50s or 60s about to retire before they can really help me or guide me in any way. And I would really love to be ahead of the game, you know, because I'm younger, you know, but I can't seem to find anybody that would be able to help me with that guidance on what my 401k should look like, or if there are other markets that maybe I can be diversified in, or if there's something that I can be doing now to make my money work for me more so that I'm more prepared for retirement and, you know, for my kids to go to college, all that sort of thing.
Well, I can tell you what it sounds like to me. How much money is in your 401ks, if you don't mind me asking?
I think 50 or 60,000.
Right. And how much money do you have saved in investable assets outside of that?
Besides my home, not much.
Yeah. So the age thing is just an excuse a lot. And I'm not saying all the times, but often we see people turned away and they like to tell you it's because of your age. But you know damn well, Robert, that if Anthony Davis walked in there and he wanted to invest some money with him, they wouldn't turn him away. So it's not your age, right?
Right.
Okay. So it's your amount of assets. And look, 50 to 60 is good considering your age. You're way ahead of where most people are at your point. But let's just go ahead and take the non-cynical view. There's a case to be made that you do not need a financial planner at this point. And the idea is, you don't need to be paying the fees. You don't need to have any more money taken from you because you're not going to get enough out of it. Look, a financial planner could be the difference in a 3% swing on your yearly returns. You know, your other financial planner could have you in some loaded mutual funds that have a couple of percentage on you, and he could be charging you an extra 1% on top of that. So if you get with the right guy, that's a good 3% swing. Now, if you're going to pay some fees to do that, it doesn't make sense to save a couple of percent on $50,000 in just a 401k. Plus, if it's just all in a 401k, they don't get to put that with some of the financial products that they get commissioned for. So it depends on first if you're going to a broker or a fiduciary. If you're going to a broker, then they don't see big dollar signs on their eyes. They don't see big commissions on their eyes. And I don't want to say you're a waste of their time, because I'll just take the assumption they're doing it for the right reasons. But we know age isn't the cutoff. It's probably more so because of the low level of your assets. And look, I'm not saying if you came in to Gregory Ricks and Associates, we wouldn't say something similar. Now, what Gregory does do different is for someone in your age is we'll still give you a financial plan. We'll say, look, here's what you need to do. Are you getting your match in your new 401k? That old 401k, don't just leave it languishing there. You're going to want to roll that over, and depending on what your math looks like and depending on what your level of aggressiveness is, maybe we'll pay the taxes and roll it into a Roth IRA. Maybe we'll just roll it into an IRA that still stays in its qualified pre-tax status. But he'll give you a plan. And we'll do some math and we'll give you a spreadsheet and we'll have you on the date. We'll say, all right, and you do all this and it looks like about 2019, you're going to come on as a client. You just don't need to be paying fees right now. We're going to put you on a path to where you'll be in a position to where you'll be enough of an investor that you'll need a financial plan.
That would be great. That would be exactly what I'm looking for at this point, is just guidance on what I could be doing or what I should be doing with that money, because I honestly, I don't know, you know.
right.
High school graduation, no, you know, financial, you know, schooling after that. So,
well, college wouldn't have helped anyway. College doesn't teach any of this stuff anyway. There is no college class that I took where they talked about when you should turn on Social Security. I mean, it just doesn't happen. So don't shortchange yourself here. For one thing, you're ahead of most of your peers. For another thing, even in your mid-30s, you're ahead of, in your financial planning, in your savings, you're ahead of 60% of the country regardless of age.
Well, I feel horrible for everybody, and I'm praying for them because I feel way behind.
Well, on the math, you're not way behind. If you get your financial future set up and you get it rolling, that compounding interest can make up a lot of the ground. Look, I'll tell you where Gregory would start. You mentioned you have old 401ks at old jobs. That's the first thing we got to fix. We got to get rid of those. And I don't mean we're going to go spend it on a boat, but you don't leave them in that old 401k. They don't want you to leave them in the old 401k. And if you leave them there, you're stuck with the few little investment choices that they give you. You have a great opportunity now to roll it over, maybe because you're going to continue with the 401k at the new jobs, you and the wife. So you'll still have some pre-tax money going in investments. We'd like to start a counterbalance to that in after-tax dollars. Well, really, this is a Roth IRA will grow tax-free. You pay the taxes on it now, and when you take distributions from it later, it doesn't even show up on the 1040. It doesn't get counted toward your income. So that, depending on the math, depending on the spreadsheet, that may be what we do with that money. Also, first things first, do you have emergency savings? Do you have about 10, maybe 15 grand in emergency money set aside that's just chilling it in a savings account or a checking account somewhere?
We did before. I was working in the oil and gas industry for the past 10 years, and this last year was a pretty hard hit to our savings, but I've got a different revenue stream now that I've switched jobs, and it's something that we're working on fixing back to have that buffer.
Get that buffer. That's where you start first, because none of this other stuff matters if you don't have an emergency fund. If we go set you up, like if you only have, you know, your $50,000 of investment dollars, and I'm just pulling it out of the sky here, and we go put that all in a fixed product, or we go roll it over into a new 401k where it's behind a tax wall. If we ever need to access that money, we just blew up your retirement plan. You know, if your air conditioner goes out or a tree falls on your house and the insurance doesn't cover it and you got to get a new roof, we just blew up your retirement plan. So you have to have the emergency money first. Second thing we'd look at in your new income streams here, both of y'all have 401ks. Are you at least contributing up to the employer match?
My wife is. I am currently waiting for my 401k to start at my new job.
Okay. Just make sure you're getting up to the match. That's free money you're leaving on the table. And then from there, you have a few more options. If you're already doing the match, but you still have a ways to go, maybe we'll tell you to max out your 401k contributions. Maybe we'll tell you to start a Roth 401k, depending on what your plan allows. See, some of this, we have to ask you questions. You know, have you bought your house? Is this the house you're going to be in for the next 20 years when you have kids? Or, you know, you're going to move soon? Could you downsize? Could you go to a different neighborhood since you changed jobs? I mean, we have a lot of questions we would ask. So, you know, I'm kind of limited.
What do I need to do to set up an appointment to do something like that and to come in and?
Well, listen, I can go ahead and I can save you a couple steps here. What you're going to be, and I can smell it all over you, Robert, you're going to need our services for the 401k analyzer. That's your primary investment vehicle. We don't need to be getting you involved in stocks and bonds mix. We don't need to get you involved in mutual funds and ETFs. We don't need to put you in any position where you're taking on risk or could lose money, or we're locking money up in any fixed products. You're on the baby steps, and the thing we need to focus on first is, since your 401k sounds like your primary, if not only, investment vehicle, let's get that just sharpened down to a razor-like edge and put you on a path. What'd you do? Did you hit my button?
No, I'm here.
No, that was Angie. She hit my button. So you would be a 401k analyzer client. And it's more than the 401k, though. This is the process we put you on, where in 5, maybe 10 years, you'll be in a position where you will definitely need a financial advisor. So you're going to call into the office, or just, look, I know you don't want to write down a number, and none of us remember numbers 5 seconds after I tell you. So get the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. You can call, and someone will answer the phone now. They'll take a message for you, and you'll get a call back from someone on our staff on Monday. So get the Gregory Rickson Associates app. Get a call and say, I'm interested in a 401k analyzer. You can give them the two-sentence short story. I'm in my mid-30s. Me and my wife are plowing money into a 401k. I don't think we quite need the full services of a financial advisor yet, but we'd like to be put on the path.
Okay, great.
All right. And look, the 401k, we'll look at the analyzer. We'll look at all the options in your 401k, figure out which ones had the best returns, what we think will do best going forward. We'll make sure you're getting the match. We will learn about your 401k plan. If you have the options to do like an in-service rollover, that's something we could take advantage of. But we have to learn more about you and our options first. But it sounds like you're doing great. Good luck to you and the wife there, Robert.
I appreciate it, James. You have a great day.
All right. And, you know, congratulations on the rebound. A guy that was working in the oil industry, a lot of people took a hit in the last year and a half. It's good to see someone land on their feet like that. And I hope we hear about Robert back on the show in about 5 to 10 years telling us the super awesome success story of becoming a 401k analyzer client and turning into some real money later. Coming up, we're going to do some highlights from previous callers. Ashley in Tennessee co-signed for her mother-in-law's house. Mother-in-law's going through bankruptcy. Will she be on the hook? That highlight's coming up next, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Report with Gregory Ricks.
And here's one of the simple explanations to consider doing a subchapter S. Okay, they're in a situation where it's all being passed to them, then it's going on the Schedule C, and you're paying the Social Security tax, and let's say you're ending up with $80,000 in income. Well, do a subchapter S entity, pay yourself a salary, you're being taxed on $50,000 if that reasonably pays your bills and supports your standard of living. And the other 30 is a K-1 distribution that passes along to you, and all you're doing is paying the income tax on that. You're not paying the payroll and Social Security taxes and such. That's one of the core considerations of doing a subchapter F.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Weeknights at 7, Saturday morning at 10 on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
Find me at GregoryRicks.com, the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, or 504-832-9200.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You've messed up your daughter's haircut. Do you A, get spiritual?
Mom, where's the mirror?
Beauty is within. Oh.
B, find the positives.
Less time blow drying, more time texting.
Or C, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have to.
Twinsies.
I kind of love it. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on adoption, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
If you've got a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory.
Folks talk about fixed indexed annuities. Great financial tool in the right place, but they do have a surrender period. What does it cost me to get in? What does it cost me to get out? And when can I exit?
Gregory Ricks and Associates, the 401k and retirement authority. 504-832-9200, the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, or GregoryRicks.com.
If you've got a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory.
How about your traditional IRA and 401k? If your earnings are in the higher tax brackets, you can benefit from contributing to a traditional IRA or 401k. This reduces your income and eliminates capital gains as a result of trading inside the account.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Weeknights at 7, Saturday morning at 10 on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. The State Department saying it's acted to reinstate visas canceled by the president's travel ban now that there's a temporary block on it.
The immigration attorneys we spoke with say they expect for the immigrants to start coming in pretty quickly, especially when you have 60,000 visas that are now active once again.
Fox's Will Carr at Los Angeles International Airport. President Trump lashing out on Twitter against the federal judge who blocked his executive order, tweeting, "The opinion of this so-called judge is ridiculous and will be overturned." And security tight in Houston ahead of tomorrow's game.
Houston could be getting a glimpse of UH-60 Black Hawk helicopters this Sunday night. Customs and Border Protection will have 3 helicopters prepared to intercept any unauthorized planes in the airspace. There will also be Cessna Citation jets and 2 Airbus helicopters.
Fox's Jim McKay, Fox News. We report, you decide.
The contents of this show are meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not meant to take place of your attorney, accountant, tax professional, personal trainer, football coach, interior decorator, or those fortune tellers at Jackson Square. Please consult a financial advisor before making all investment decisions.
Gregory Ricks & Associates is a registered investment advisory firm. If you'd like a copy of Form ADV, our full disclosures, call the office 504-832-9200 or go to gregoryricks.com.
If you've got a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, Winning at Life, on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
Welcome. It's Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I'm your co-host, James Parker. In Gregory's absence, we often like to go back and play some Gregory clips so you get the full complement of financial expertise that would otherwise be lacking in his absence. We had a great call on the Daily Wrap not too long ago. Ashley in Tennessee, she had co-signed for her mother-in-law's house. Mother-in-law's going through bankruptcy. Uh-oh. What liability is she looking at? Ashley from Tennessee. This is Ashley calling in from Tennessee, and I think she was watching us on Periscope a second ago. Hey, Ashley, welcome to Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you?
Hey, James and Gregory. So I have a question about bankruptcy. My mom has a house that is in the process of getting foreclosed on. My husband and I co-signed on the mortgage. We are not on the deed. She's the only one on the deed. We saw a bankruptcy attorney today. He assures us that under Chapter 13, that we as co-signers will be protected. And I just need to make sure that that is correct.
That's an attorney that told you that?
Yes.
And he's licensed and practices in the state you're in?
That is correct.
I'm not going to argue with him, but that's a scary situation. But I would have to trust him. Did you write a check for his advice?
No, the consultation was free, and then he charges $3,000, you know, his fees, and that comes out of the repayment.
Okay, so he's the one handling the bankruptcy.
Correct.
He said you will be or you should be fine.
He said that my husband and I will be protected.
Will be protected.
Right.
Okay. That's just a scary thing about co-signing, Ashley. It's really scary about co-signing. Is there any equity in that house?
There may be.
Doesn't sound like much.
Because if the loan's not made whole by the liquidation of the estate, she is co-signing, even though there's bankruptcy protections, that would show up on her and her husband's credit, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm concerned.
This doesn't sound right to me either.
I'm concerned she still has some exposure because, look, if it's in delinquency, you're a co-signer. The co-signer's when you're co-signing, you are saying, if she don't pay, I'm paying. The
Correct.
Bankruptcy may get you out of it, but it's probably stained your, you know, it's kind of like setting that soft drink on your
coffee table. You got the little ring there.
Yeah. Or your credit report setting it on. It kind of stained it a little bit there, I would think.
Right. For her delinquent payments the last 3 months or however long it's been. However, we have since got that, you know, paid that in. So we've avoided, you know, complete foreclosure. So now she has decided that she may want to file bankruptcy. We just want to be sure that it's not going to go against us. You know, I know 3 months behind is bad enough as a co-signer, but we just want to be sure that bankruptcy is not going to go against us.
So the bankruptcy, sorry to interrupt you, Ashley, but the bankruptcy is going to clean it up and get everything going forward, current, paid off, and this should be good going forward, right?
Correct. That's the way that we understood him.
Yeah, you're still exposed if this goes bad. You're a co-signer. If this bankruptcy doesn't clean it up going forward, I would worry about the exposure. And one of the things, and it's just you're stuck, because here's the deal is you might say, well, darn, I'd like to get off of that loan, which her credit's ugly for a long time because of the bankruptcy. That's just, wow. Right. You really have to think about this when you do this, whether it's a house or a car. And doing it with somebody that's related, you care about, and you love could still turn out bad.
Yeah, and the attorney definitely knows more about the case than we do, but to be that optimistic and be sounded awful sure of himself, because this could be sticky. But actually,
but she's got to take care of business for this, even beyond the bankruptcy.
And sorry about your mom, Ashley. Good luck with all that.
Oh, thanks, Sam. I know when the credit union finally called my husband and I, that was on August the 31st, and told us that it was 3 months behind, and we had to get, you know, so much money in by 4:30 that evening, or they were going to foreclose.
Some paperwork, right?
Yeah, it was going to get worse then.
Yeah, so I was in such a shock that I said, you know, why are you threatening? If you're going to do it, go ahead and do it. And the attorney laughed at me for saying that, because he said, you know, since we don't have a date as of then, that, you know, they were just doing it as a scare tactic. And it certainly worked, because, you know, I didn't have any idea. My mom has loads and loads of medical problems. And, you know, she just wasn't able to afford it anymore. And I lost my job because of her being so ill and needed my care. So now we're getting right back, you know, back on track. But since I'm not working because I'm having to take care of her, she wants to be sure that, you know, we are protected and that it doesn't go against us. And he assured us that it didn't, but I just wanted somebody else because, you know, if we do it, that's money in his pocket. So,
yeah, you just got to also look beyond this. She's got the health issues. How is this going to play out long term? Investigate beyond the bankruptcy where you're at right now on how this may play out. That's what you need to do, is look a little bit further down the road. Ashley, if we could be a future help, and I'm sorry to hear that. It's one of the things we always talk about that affect women. Women are usually the caregivers. Thanks for the call.
We're back live now. Coming up, we have another highlight that I want to play for you. Derek and Gonzalez called the day that the Dow passed 20,000. He wanted to know, hey, Gregory, where is it going from here? And you'll hear Gregory's response to that. Next week, our guest from the Total Wealth Authority on the show is going to be Wes Blanchard. He's the estate planning attorney of the Total Wealth Authority of Gregory Ricks and Associates. And he's joining us on the phone for a quick preview. Wes, what you bringing to the table next week?
Guys, I kind of want to run through the succession process again. I feel like that's something we touch on briefly every once in a while amongst some of the other estate planning options. But as of late, that's kind of become something that we're getting a lot more of through the door. And I just want to highlight what that process is and why it's really worth avoiding, if at all possible.
Yeah, you know, you're right. We talk about setting up your own estate plan, but how do you adjudicate someone else's estate plan that's thrust upon you? That sounds good to me. I know you're a huge football fan. Were you listening yesterday? Gregory, Ricks, and I had to make our bet on the Super Bowl, and both of us.
No, I missed that.
All right, both of us wanted to pick the Patriots, and I'm like, well, what if you give me some points? I'll pick Atlanta if you give me 9 points. He's like, I'm not going to give you 9 points. So we asked Siri, heads or tails. Gregory called tails, and I said, Siri, heads or tails. A coin. She said it's tails. So now I got to root for Atlanta. As gross as that is, I got to root for Atlanta on Sunday for a bottle of Malbec. But who's your pick?
That's pretty ugly. I think New England's got it. I think they have a pretty stout run defense, and that's usually what gives Atlanta's opponents fit. So I think they might have a bit of a challenge on their hands.
Yeah, I love talking football with you because you're one of the few people that keeps up with it more than I do. Tom Brady, best quarterback of all time?
I think he's solidified it by getting here. I don't even think he has to win the game.
And if you're the best quarterback of all time, doesn't that make you the best football player of all time?
That's debatable. There's so many positions on a football team, but you're certainly way up there just by nature of the position. Yep.
I mean, who else is in that conversation? Joe Montana, Jim Brown?
Jerry Rice, too.
All right. Well, I look forward to it next weekend, and have a good Super Bowl there, Wes.
Thanks,
guys. Oh, wait, I wanted to ask you one more thing. Are you going to be at the Valentine's Luncheon for the Women Winning at Life, answering a few questions there, and then they kick you out when it's fun time?
I'm not quite sure. I'm certainly open to it, but yeah, I would love to.
All right. Thank you very much. Wes Blanchard, Total Wealth Authority's estate planning attorney, so all aspects of your financial well-being are taken care of when it comes to Gregory Ricks and Associates. Let's go ahead and take this break a little early because I want to try and get in both of these highlights. We're definitely talking to Derek and Gonzalez and his exchange with Gregory Ricks a little over a week ago about the Dow passing 20,000. Maybe we can get to Gene in Covington as well. Or we can take your call, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
How often do you worry about money? James Parker here. You know, you don't have to worry about what's going to happen with your 401k when the stock market takes a dive again. You don't have to worry about running out of money when you retire. You can get your financial life in order, but it's a lot easier if you get some help. Find out if you're a good fit for Gregory Ricks and Associates. Come to our next live event. To reserve your seat, go to gregoryricks.com, download the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, or 504-832-9200.
If you've got a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory.
If you're not at your old job, your 401k shouldn't be either. I don't want it to become forgotten money. My guidance would be is if you're going to take and roll that over and you're going to correlate it to risk, I think you should work with somebody loss adverse, meaning that they would rather get you to cash than writing down losses.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks, weeknights at 7, Saturday morning at 10 on News Talk 99.5 WRN. No.
The National Council on Aging is the nation's leader of helping people 60 years and older meet the challenges of aging. They partner with nonprofit organizations, government, and businesses to provide services such as utility bill assistance, wellness and nutrition options, and many other everyday tasks that get more difficult with age. For more information on the National Council on Aging, call or visit your local branch. The Jefferson Council on Aging, 6620 Riverside Drive, Suite 216, Metairie, Louisiana, 504-888-5880.
Gregory Ricks and Associates brings you the Total Wealth Authority, the team to handle all aspects of your money. Meet our CPA, Jude Heath.
Well, tax season is what it is. Some folks come in and the tax year is already planned. On a going forward basis, there was some legislation that was put in that some of it can affect some of the listeners.
The Total Wealth Authority. Summon us with the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, gregoryricks.com, or 504-832-9200.
The Ricks Report with Gregory Ricks.
We're a very busy firm. It's kind of like going to a restaurant. What do you want to be, the only one dining in there for lunch? 20 tables and you and a couple other people are in there? Nah, I don't want to do that. I want it to be busy because I know the food's good and I'm getting high quality. And that's one thing about our firm is, you know, we're busy. We have appointments all day long, every day, multiple advisors. If you want more information about our services and fees, we have form ADV, and you can go to gregoryricks.com. Bottom of every page, there is a link for that. Or call the office, 504-832-9200.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Weeknights at 7, Saturday morning at 10 on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
Find me at gregoryricks.com, the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, or 504-832-9200.
You gotta keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down, hey. You gotta keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down, hey. I know it's hard, know it's hard.
You won't learn this anywhere else. Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
My hands in my pockets, kicking these rocks. It's kind of hard to watch this life go by.
Welcome to Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. I'm your co-host, James Parker. Stay put, because coming up in 14 minutes, Mortgage Gumbo with Dwayne Stein. They're going through the process by which Angie is attempting to become a homeowner. I believe we're on week four of the somewhat mini-series. But listen, if you have any mortgage questions or you have any questions about how the financial executive orders passed across President Trump's desk yesterday could affect your money or your ability to buy a house or refinance a house or down payments and whatnot, that guy is coming up soon and he'll be able to answer all of it. I want to go through a couple of highlights here. In Gregory's absence, we like to go through some clips here to include some financial expertise from previous shows. And it was 25th of this year, the Dow made its historic leap past 20,000. Derek and Gonzalez wanted to call in and ask Gregory Ricks about the implications of that, so we'll hear it now.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
What do you think, Derek? What if this just keeps going?
There's no way. There's no way 30,000. And part of my question is based on the fact that I've done, you know, probably around 25% gains since the election. So if I had to give back 10, I'm not going to be that mad. We're talking about 10% in a quarter, maybe a quarter and a half. That's not bad in my book.
So you're 100% invested in your 401k?
Yes. There may be some cash. Maybe some cash. But my point is I've always lived by the fact that little pigs get away and hogs get slaughtered. And I want to know kind of where the point is where I'm becoming a hog by staying in this rally that reminds me of irrational exuberance.
Well, also reminds me of the 2000s as well. That's the only thing we can correlate to this where this keeps going. And right. I was thinking about this before the show, and one of my thoughts is, could this keep going? How far does it keep going? So just think about 10% gains over 8 years.
Well, so now call.
You get darn close to 30,000. But I tell you, at the end of 8 years, whoever, everybody, you know, it might be more than 50% sick of the king at that time and want to change. And I tell you what, it will be ugly after the 8 years. He makes a run of it and just say it keeps going, but then change comes, really, for the market. Now,
well,
I'm a
believer. 8 years, it's 22,000, right?
Well, 10% of 20,000 is 2,000. So if you're adding that on every year, yeah.
Oh, you're compounding. Compounding. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it, just say it gets darn close to it. Then we'll be all hearing this, but then it goes away and then probably drops back below 20,000 after 8 years. It doesn't go straight up anyhow. There's going to be problems, whether it's the debt ceiling, Dems pushing back against them. Black Swan, we hadn't had the geopolitical test, and I think they need to be careful with him. But, you know, you remember Reagan was in, and he was that outsider that got in, and everybody's in, but old Libya decided they're going to test him. Iran knew better. They let the hostages go.
I wasn't invested in Reagan. I wish I would have been.
Oh, yeah, I understand, but I'm just talking about things that are going to come up that test can be problematic. Here's what I would do. I'd probably, in your case, I'd dial it back 30% because you're taking a lot of profits off, but you're also creating some cash that if we do have a downturn, you can push back in. Now, you may want to dial back some more when this starts happening, but you think about it, you know, it's just keeping some powder dry for the next battle. I think there's discount. We're still holding a good bit of cash, but I'm kind of wanting to get through March before I'm about to fill up with securities. I want to see how this first 90 days, I call it 90 days, goes. It's the way I look at it. Yeah. But I want to get through March anyhow, see what's going to happen with the Fed. I doubt the Fed does anything in March because of the debt ceiling, but I think they pop it. How are the markets going to react to that? Remember, markets don't like interest rates going up. A year ago was a correction because of the rate hike in December, but the Trump train has snuffed that out, so does it add on the two more? I definitely believe in dialing it back and having some cash going forward because you could even do the hedge, 50-50 hedge. I'm going to stay 50 in and get 50 out. If this thing's going to keep going, I'll start moving back in because you can say, darn, at least I kept some in. Or it could be the other way. Good thing I cashed half for right now because a discount came along.
That makes great sense.
That's the way I look at it. Because what's easier, making up money or getting it back to work?
See? Get it back to work.
Easy to get it back to work. You can push it in real quick. You get down 10 or 15%. Ouch.
That hurts.
Now you need time. So that right. that's where I end up with that. After all this long discussion about it, that's where I end up. But we needed to talk about the problems.
No doubt. And we don't know the problems yet, I don't think, is the problem. I think you've got so many variables and being pushed by everybody feeling confident about what's going to happen. That's not a real, for me, it's not a real reason to invest in anything. Just because you feel good about it.
Yeah, it's what you talked about. Irrational exuberance is exactly what I feel, and that's what I spoke described it as last week. So thinking about right. Greenspan's on that, and this is kind of where's the fundamentals taking us? They're not taking us anywhere. This is a ride that is like doesn't have the right. proper foundation in place. So we should start thinking about it that way, and then see how this plays out. We don't want to miss out, but we don't want to get creamed like you talked about. Thank you for listening to Winning at Life, the Daily Wrap.
Every night, brother. Have a great evening. Thank you again.
Okay. You're welcome. Glad to be of help.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Back live now. James Parker here, Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. During the Daily Wrap, we had an exceptional report come out of the corporate earnings season. Facebook smashed expectations. 1.8 billion monthly users. That means more than a quarter of the planet uses Facebook during any given month. Almost a quarter of the planet uses it on a daily basis. Daily users were up to 1.23 billion. So what does this mean? This means the stock had a great week. It had some fantastic gains starting on the day that this came out, February 1st, going forward. And also it makes people look back at the IPO of Facebook. It came out May 18th, 2012. We were here detailing it on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. And when it opened up at $38.23. Now, it was immediately panned as a failure because by September it had dropped down to $20 and some change. Actually, it got down in the $19 range October of 2012. But since then, it's gone up, and it's now, let's see here. It's $130 bucks. So that's more than a 500% swing from that low in October of 2012. But if you bought it on day one, you're up over 250%. And that is the allure of the IPO. That is why everyone salivates at the opportunities presented by an IPO. And so when you hear about Snapchat filing their paperwork on Thursday saying we're going to have an IPO probably later this year, and so we're going to get ready to actually go public, people want to jump all over it. People are salivating. The hundreds of millions of users, this could be the next Facebook. Or, wait a minute, this could be the next Twitter. Now, Twitter is a similar story, social media platform, probably the second most popular social media platform out there. Doesn't have the same storyline behind its IPO. When Twitter joined the public world, it did so, let's see here, November 7th, 2013. So it's a year and a half younger as far as its public nature goes. It started at $41.65. Remember, Facebook started at 38 and change. So almost the exact same opening price. In fact, Twitter was a little bit higher than Facebook in its IPO. Now, Facebook went from $38 to, what is it today? Let me turn my phone sideways so we can... right now it's at $130.98, started at $38. Twitter started at $41.65. Where is it at today? Turn my phone sideways again. Twitter's at $17.61. Twitter is not having fun. Twitter has lost almost 60% of its value from the IPO. So that's the danger you play, or that's the dangerous game you play with IPOs. Boy, if you get in on that Facebook on the first day and you can hold it for 5 years, you're up 500%. Or you can get in on that first day, you can hold it for 3.5 years, and you're down 60%. Playing with IPOs, oh yeah, they make some people rich. They're also more likely to clean you out. If that's a level of risk you're willing to accept, hey, man, more power to you. You like to play with fire. You like to live on the edge. Have fun with the Snapchat IPO. We'll be watching the Snapchat IPO from a distance and reporting on it going forward, and there will be some lessons learned here. But if you hear this Facebook news and you think, all right, well, I need to get on Snapchat because it's probably going to happen here again, I just want to, my counter argument to that, look at Twitter, go look at some charts. That ought to scare you right back over to the safety side of the aisle. Stick around. Coming up next, you're going to hear Mortgage Gumbo with our buddy Dwayne Stein, also a member of the Total Wealth Authority, and he'll be in attendance at our next live event March 15th, 6:30 p.m. Roots, Chris, and Metter. If you want to come out to the Financial First Aid of Gregory Ricks and Associates, get the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, go to gregoryricks.com, or call the office 504-832-9200. I'm James Parker. This has been Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Happy weekend.
Life with Gregory Ricks is copyrighted by Gregory Ricks for the private use of our audience. Any unauthorized use of...